It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now.
Is that high enough?
The window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
It's just really faint in the headphones.
Yes.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show for the very first time on Monday night at 9 o'clock here on the Horn exclusively. Thank you, Bob Kincaid, for all the great words, and thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to the Horn audience. Again, we've decided that this week we were going to do our initial week exclusively here on the Horn, to talk to the Horn listeners and to bring you into our audience. Bob has done a fantastic job of building the Horn. Now it's time to expand, bring other programming in, and I'm proud of the fact that he's brought us in, and I think we are going to do some great work in the coming months and in the coming years because there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And today on Labor Day, is the day to say we are going to take this country in the right direction. The president did a fantastic job today in the speech he gave, Jake. Again, this is Jake Long, my left-hand man. But here's the thing. We need to start taking the message back, and you can help us. And we can help each other. And together, we can do what needs to be done, Jake.
Absolutely, Rick. I saw a little bit of his speech. He's talking about rebuilding our infrastructure. You talk about sorely needed, which should have been done 10, 15 years ago, but at least the president has finally come out and said, I have a plan. This is what we're going to push. This is what we need for the country. And it's, although it's probably for us a little bit late, it's sorely needed in this country, and we're going in the right direction.
And again, I got to be honest, though, in looking at it, $50 billion for infrastructure, I wish it was a little bit bigger. But again, political realities being what they are, that's probably all we're going to get. And look, no matter what this president does, the Republicans are going to do the opposite. And just like Obama said during the speech, he said, yes, we can. And immediately the Republicans said, oh no, we can't. He said that if I said fish live in the sea, they'd say no. And the reality is they have done everything they can do to block this man. The president said when it comes to just about everything we've done to strengthen the middle class and rebuild our economy, almost every Republican in Congress said no. Even where we usually agree, they say no. The president went on to say, I'm going to keep fighting every single day, every single hour, every single minute to turn this economy around, to put people back to work, to renew the American dream for your families and for future generations. And, of course, the Republicans came right out with a rebuttal saying, and we will keep fighting every single day, every single hour, every single minute to turn back anything you do, to put our agenda ahead of people, to renew billionaire dreams for our campaign donors and our future campaign donors. And that has been what it's been the whole year and a half now that this man has been in office. It has been him standing up and saying, let's try something, and the Republicans saying, no,
And there's something, there's another real important milestone. When you look at Labor Day, we got about, traditionally, that means that the political system has started. We got about 2 months. And in that 2 months, I think the labor movement and some progressives in this country have a job to do. As of now, it looks like all the polls I've seen that they are trending towards voting Republican, but they're not dyeing-the-wool votes. They're leaning. Those of us who are fighting for social justice and more progressive initiatives in this country to make this country what it should be have a job to do. In the next 8 weeks, we have to convince the electorate that now is not the time to be discouraged. Now is the time to be bold and stand up and back this president. Yes, we are disappointed in some of his efforts, but if we don't stand up to him, the Republicans quite possibly will be able to, come election night, we'll be able to say we can block any of his initiatives, and that would be a shame. Not only would it be a negative for the country, but it could put his reelection in 2012 in jeopardy. Rick.
Well, I mean, the reality is, look, the Republican Party is praying that the American populace is amnesic. They're hoping and praying you forget about Reagan, Bush, Clinton, Bush, and their bizarre trade policies and their economic policies. They're hoping that you forget that they let our manufacturing base go. They're counting on Americans to be fearful and yearning for the days of the failed policies of the Bush administration. Remember, this guy came into office, gigantic mess to be cleaned up. Gigantic mess. And they have been in the way every single step of the way. That's what they do. And that's why I'm asking the Horn audience. We need to get out and take back the message and say, look, you know, we're not thrilled with what this guy's done. There are a lot of things he could have done better, and we need to push him in that direction. But things could have been an awful lot worse with John McCain and Sarah Palin in there.
Well, I think, again, just as I said earlier in the day at that event we were at, you and I, Rick, I think it is a fair comparison. There are some comparisons to what happened during the Great Depression, what happened now, where after 4 years, the country was persuaded to go back, and I'm talking 1936, coming out of the Great Depression, FDR was swept into office with a huge mandate. 1936, pretty much the same power, the same people that are now trying to say to the American people, well, you know, we got to go back to the good old days. And they start to question the integrity of the president and question whether he's really a patriotic American.
Well, no, wait a minute. They're calling him everything but.
Everything but. Everything but. A socialist, a Muslim, a communist. And the truth is, they called FDR a socialist and a communist also. They're saying, well, we have to go back to the good old days. Well, you know, again, do we really want to go back to the Bush days, to the last 8 years? Do we really want to go back to the tax policies of the Bush administration? Do we really want to go back to the constant drain of good paying, family-sustaining jobs? Is that what we want in this country? Do we really want to go back to 100 million Americans being underinsured? I think not. Now, it's hard, and we talked about this before, it's hard to explain to someone that doesn't have a job that, you know, there's help on the way, and it could have been a lot worse. If that person, in fact, does not have a job. And therein lies the problem. He's made some progress, but here's the irony. The very people who are saying that we have an ineffectual president were responsible for him, to some degree, being ineffectual. And that sometimes is not easy. Sometimes the American people have a short attention span.
So what the president called for today was saying, look, we need to rebuild 150,000 miles of roads, enough to circle the world six times, he said. We're going to lay and maintain 4,000 miles of railway, enough to stretch coast to coast. I've been saying that should have been the first thing he should have done the day he took office. Rebuild our infrastructure. Give us a 21st century infrastructure. And give, I mean, from a business perspective, even if you want to be a pro-business guy, this is what business needs. They need the ability to get their goods from point A to point B, and quickly. Where we live here in the Harrisburg area, the highway system here is at its limit. It's at its limit today. We're doing nothing for 10 years down the road where it will be complete gridlock. You look at cities like New York and Boston, where traffic tie-ups 2-3 hours at a time are normal. And yet we've done nothing to alleviate that. We've done nothing to build our infrastructure. We've done nothing to take cars off the road and put people onto trains, which I think would be a great thing for us in this country. And what the president needs to do is he needs to stand up like he did today and tell the American people what his vision is and that his vision is better than the Republican vision. And look, that can't be hard work because the Republicans have no vision. They have no ideas. They have no idea how to govern. And, you know, you look at all these teabaggers that are running around wanting to run for office. Every one of them say that they despise government. Why in the name of heaven would you begin to even think about somebody who's telling you right up front that they don't like government? They despise it, and they're going to destroy it and let a private for-profit interest take over. It's just amazing to me. Anyway. This is kind of the stuff we're going to be talking about from now until the election, especially because there needs to be some voice, and we want to hear from you. My email address, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I engage all emails, and I answer them personally. So this is the reason we've done this, Jake. I think this is a great place for us to start here at the Horn and engage some of the listeners. During the break, we'll get the phone number up on our webpage, thericksmithshow.com, to make sure that people who want to give us a call can. We're having some technical issues with our phone lines, but we're going to make sure that we have the ability to talk to you and that you can talk to us.
And we're hoping to bring into our radio family those who perhaps have to work late, those who perhaps go to bed late, those who perhaps just like to listen to radio. We encourage you in the strongest possible terms to contribute. Call in. The more calls, the better. We'd even welcome some anti-calls. We would love that discussion. That's why we're here.
And that's part of this. I don't want to make it sound like we're reaching out too much, but the reality is our Horn friends have the ability to influence one of the most conservative areas in the country. And what I get quite often from people who listen to the show for the first or second time, they go, well, you know what? We don't hear what you're saying anywhere else in the media. There's nothing out there. There's nothing like what you're doing out here that we can find. And what we need people who are going to say, you know what? You're right, Rick. We do need to rebuild our infrastructure. You know what, right? You're right. We need manufacturing jobs. We need to bring back the productive ability of this country. There's a bridge in Trenton, New Jersey, that I pass over frequently. Big sign on it. Trenton makes the world tanks. For years, that was true. The reality is now is the only thing that's leaving out of this country, the only products leaving, are jobs. And we've basically traded really good-paying middle-class jobs for cheap toasters. That has got to stop. We have got to stop the bleeding first and foremost and begin to rebuild our manufacturing base. Here on the program, we're going to be talking with the Alliance for American Manufacturing every Monday. That's going to be our Manufacturing Monday segment because I think it's vitally important that we get an idea of what's going on in the manufacturing sector. And just, you know, there have been some successes, but in my opinion, not enough. And we can and we must rebuild those manufacturing jobs because those were middle-class jobs. Simple stuff. What do you say we take a break here? They can't hear you now.
That sounds good. That sounds good.
Let's take a quick break. We're right back after this. Stick around. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Yeah. Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show. We'll be right back.
For many, the 8-hour day is the standard, but it wasn't always this way. The original American workday was from sunup to sundown, following the demands of an agricultural workday. Over time, the nation became more industrialized and workers moved from individually owned, self-sufficient farms to factories, taking workers from their homes and families. Factory owners demanded the agricultural sunup to sundown workday, forcing workers to toil long hours in grueling conditions. Workers began to collectively organize in pursuit of more time for family, education, and recreation. The cry of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will grew louder. For a century, the 8-hour day was viewed as the holy grail of the labor movement, and for this hallowed vision, workers sacrificed, often with their blood and their lives. The first strike for shorter hours occurred in May of 1791 in the city of Philadelphia, where carpenters protested a day's wages, paying the same in January as was paid for a longer day in July. Chicago in 1886 was home to one of the largest showings of solidarity. Some 80,000 workers turned out to support the 8-hour cause. It was in Chicago's Haymarket Square that a terrorist bomb and the blazing guns of company-paid police cost policemen and numerous workers their lives and their blood. As a result of the Haymarket tragedy, 8 innocent men were tried and convicted for a crime they did not commit. 4 of the men were hung. The Haymarket Square tragedy was but one of many battles in which working men, women, and children shed blood, tears, and flesh in the pursuit of 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what we will. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Mode was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
That's a good one. That is a good one. Get to the bookstores early, folks. Pick up your copy of The Young Guns. Yes, Eric Cantor, Paul Ryan, and Kevin McCarthy are the Young Guns. And, well, really what they're out for is your cash. No small bills, please, 20s and largers. Keep that heavy change. We want the stuff that crinkles, but large bills. I guess that's what it's about. I mean, the book's set to be released here next month. But listen to this comedy trailer they got here.
Millions of voices ignored.
This is my town hall meeting, and I set the rules, and I had these rules.
You wouldn't let anybody speak.
There is a better way, and a new team is ready to bring America back. Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Paul Ryan, joined by common sense conservative candidates from across the country. Together, they are ready to make history. Together, they are the Young Guns. Innovative, energetic, forging new solutions. One book will outline a vision to restore America's prosperity. Young Guns, a new generation of conservative leaders.
Young Guns. Common sense conservatives. I got to tell you, the conservative movement has more has had more facelifts than Joan Rivers. I mean, come on. First they were compassionate. Oh, we're compassionate conservatives. And now we're common sense conservatives. And, you know, is this a parody of some sort? I mean, is this a joke? The Young Guns? Are you kidding me? This is kind of like the kid who can't get a date, you know, wearing a shirt that says player. Or a boxer who's never won a fight going, calling himself champ. Hey, just call me champ. Come on, you can't give yourself your own nickname, can you?
Apparently you can.
The Young Guns, we're going to shoot down Social Security and get Jack Granny back into the workforce. I mean, come on. At some point, don't you think people have to wake up and realize that these kind of kooky people, the Young Guns, are nuts? I mean, have you seen Paul Ryan's roadmap to get the economy back on its feet? Yeah, privatize Social Security, privatize Medicare, pretty much do away with it, repeal the estate tax and repeal all corporate taxes, lose about $2 trillion over the next next decade or so, and redistribute the wealth as the Republicans have done for the last 30 years from you and me in the bottom 90% of the country up to the top 1%. Basically going back to the Bush era. Oh, did I mention that the ad was brought to you by, quote, every Republican is crucial pack. Are you kidding me? Every Republican is crucial.
Wouldn't you like to know who contributes to that one?
Not even a flowery euphemism. You know, like American loving baby kissers or something. Nothing. Just every Republican is crucial pack. The young guns. I love that. The young guns. And these are the people that, honestly, these are the folks that are blocking the president at every chance. And now they want to be the young guns. So this book's going to be available. So if you want to get it, you can put a couple of coins in their pocket. I'm sure it's not going to be cheap. So good. The young guns.
Actually, I think I've seen it, Rick. And, it's kind of slick. Their message is BS. We know it. But on a certain level, you got to give them credit. I mean, they deliver their message, although their message is pretty much, again, BS. You have to give them credit. They go out and they're innovative in their message. Now, the Democrats have to do a better job in image. I don't think the Democrats have been as successful as the Republicans in getting their message out to the American people. At least not this year. They've been under attack. The Republicans have, I think, for the most part, have won the debate out in the public. And the Democrats have to figure out a way, how do you get the message back to the American people?
Well,
the facts are on your side.
What you have to do is you have to stand up and point out exactly what it is that they want to do. Number one, the Republicans want to repeal the health care. They want to go back to the same pay-or-die system, the same pay-or-die system that we've had for years. They want to go back to making Granny decide whether she can have cat food or medicine. So they want to end Medicare. They want to end the health care bill. They want that pay-or-die system. They also want to end Social Security. Remember, the sky's falling. The Social Security's broke. There's not a dime left. Oh, my God, the sky's falling, just as it has been every year for the past 75 years. The sky is falling. And then you get into some of this other bizarre stuff that the Tea Party people talk about. Like, we want Comcast to be able to control the Internet. We don't want any Internet. We don't want no Internet net neutrality because we don't know what it is. The reality is it's Internet freedom. If we can't get the message out on the Internet, people like our show and people like The Horn, democracy dies. And that's what's so important about programs like mine and networks like Bob's over at the Head On Radio Network is that this is what democracy is supposed to look like. It's a cross-section of ideas, Jake. It's people with differing views coming together and saying, you know what, let's have a conversation about this stuff.
Well, when you have people that are actually saying, and the Republican candidate from Alaska has actually said, who won a surprising victory over Murkowski. He's been there for a long time. I mean, where's this guy coming from when he says it's unconstitutional to extend unemployment benefits? I mean, these right-wingers just love the Constitution. You know, they love to misinterpret it. And when you talk to them, their knowledge of the Constitution, most of the people I've run into at the rallies, you've talked to them, their knowledge of the Constitution is very limited.
Well, it's like the guy at the Alaska Fair. Who, you know, he had his big impeach Obama sign on private property there at the fair, screaming at the security guard, saying, it's my right, free speech, free speech. And again, you have the right to free speech on government property. You don't have the right to free speech on private property. They can ask you to leave, and they did. And then he refused to leave, so they arrested him. And look, folks, that's the reality of this country. And this is what I tell my tea friends. Look, you keep talking about anti-government. Well, who takes over in the place of government? Private, for-profit interests who don't care about you. They don't care about democracy. They care about profit. And they don't care about your First Amendment. They don't care about your Second, Third, Fourth, Fifth, Sixth, Seventh, Eighth, Ninth, Tenth. They could care less. Doesn't matter to them. Profit. That's sacrosanct. some of the other crazy things they want to do. They want to defund public education. Why? So that the bottom 90% of the country can't afford private schools, and that we can just send the kids back to the mine. Or that's how we'll get the sewing jobs back. That's how we'll get the menial manual labor jobs back. We'll put the kids in the factories. That was a great idea. On this Labor Day, stop and think about that for a minute. Some of the major accomplishments labor unions have had, one of them being the end of child labor. We used to send kids into the mines, and I'm sure our Horn listeners know that like anyone else, know that better than anyone else. You also know that the labor movement fought to decriminalize union membership. You know, I think about the guy we met down near Lancaster, Dick Boyd, telling the story of his father taking him down under the bridge at midnight so that he could secretly have a union meeting. This is the world they want to take us back to. They want to take us back to a work day of sun up to sun down. They want to take us back to the days where if a worker got injured or killed, well, next. Have a good one. Good luck. Let me know how it works out for you. Next. They don't care about unemployment. Again, you know, going back to what you said about Miller. It's unconstitutional. You know, who fought for the minimum wage? Even though it really didn't help them, the labor movement. Who fought to reduce workplace injuries? Who fought to reduce fatalities? Labor did. And every step forward was fought by the same group of people, Jake. The exact same group of people.
Now, you would have thought the Republicans would have learned from, and we keep going back to Social Security, but it's such a, such an important part of many Americans' lives, of giving them a bottom line of human decency. The Republicans have, I think they have learned to give them a little credit, Rick. They're not coming out and saying, we want to privatize Social Security. They're slick about it. You take Ryan's program. He hasn't called it privatization. What he said, he wants to allow the younger people to set up private accounts. That sounds so innocuous. Private accounts. Well, that is privatization. It's the proverbial camel under the, you know, under the.
So the two me's of the world. So the past two me's of the world can then give the money, all the Social Security money, to his criminal friends on Wall Street, so that they can fee us to death and transaction us to death to where eventually, you know, I remember when I started the job that I had, driving a truck for a living. At the first day on the job, the boss said, you know what? In 30 years, if you work here, you're going to have $1 million. You're going to retire in 30 years from this company with $1 million in your private RIP account. And I looked at him, you know, this is 18 years ago, and I said, you know what? There is no way that the powers to be are going to give a dumb truck driver $1 million. It's not going to happen. Oh, no, 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 you're going to have it. I'm there 18 years. I've got $150,000. I seriously doubt that the next 12 are going to bring me $850,000. What do you think my odds of that happening are?
Little to none. Well,
slim to none.
You know, I can remember back. This is going back a little bit a ways. In the early 80s when the IRAs came out, and I can remember as if it was yesterday these commercials. And they said, well, you put X number of dollars in every year for X number of years, and you're going to have way over $1 million. These were the investment firms that were going to prosper from IRAs. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just employers that were jumping on the bandwagon, but that was the beginning of IRAs, and they promised these glorious returns. Funny thing happened on the way to the bank. We had a couple, you know, recessions, and we had the big recession a couple of years ago.
And what happened then?
Well,
all those 401ks ended
correct.
Up 200 point fives, and where did that money go? It went up. Because we see now all the bank profits are back, the CEO bonuses are back, all the money is flowing on Wall Street. Boy, they think it's just a happy time right now. But Main Street, man, everybody I know who had a 401k, they're feeling screwed. They're feeling cheated. And if you remember, and I think I do, labor was out in front of this saying, no, we don't want to run away from the defined benefit. We want to keep the defined benefit plan because the individual cannot ride the waves of the market.
Correct.
And that's what the defined benefit plan is about. It's about riding those waves and the individual being secure from that. And that's what Republicans hate. That's what these conservatives hate. The fact that a working person would have some security. It's what they hate. Anyway, let's take a quick break right here. We're right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
There's always the neighborhood dumpster. Now, you might find competition with homeless people there, but there are videos that have been produced to show you how to helpfully dine.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Flight attendants tomorrow will protest the firing of a flight attendant by Compass Airline after she revealed her low wages qualify her for food stamps. Doug Cunningham reports.
Compass Airline flight attendants will picket at Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport Tuesday to protest the firing of a flight attendant after she publicly revealed that she qualified for food stamps. Kirsten Arianajad appeared in a local TV news interview saying because of her low salary, she qualified for food stamps. The Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, says rather than address the poverty-level wages it pays to some of its employees, Compass Airline instead fired Arianajad. The union says that regional air carriers who operate more than half of daily commercial flights continue to pay poverty-level wages while their CEOs make millions. Compass flight attendants are paid at or near minimum wage. The union says a starting flight attendant makes between $13,842 and $15,453 a year. In Minnesota, the most you can make and still qualify for food stamps is $1,174 a month, making some flight attendants eligible for that poverty food program.
Workers at Jimmy John's sub shops in Minneapolis walked off the job on Thursday at nine locations to announce the formation of the Industrial Workers of the World, Jimmy John's Workers Union. The workers are demanding better wages. Many workers are currently paid near minimum wage. They're also seeking sick days, consistent scheduling, and increased protections regarding safety on the job and sexual harassment. This isn't the first chain that the IWW has targeted in recent years. Starbucks locations in Minneapolis and New York City have been organized by the Starbucks. The Jimmy John's workers are planning an additional rally today. Workers at Amont's plant in Williamson, New York, who have been on strike since May, voted down the newest set of contract proposals on Thursday. The plant is owned by the Dr. Pepper Snapple Group, which has been seeking to lower wages at the plant. The company, which has been turning a profit, says it needs to slash wages in order to stay competitive with other plants in the region. A 401k proposal that was voted down would have amounted to an average loss of $3,600 for each worker, represented by the RWDSU. A new report by Kaiser Family Foundation has found employers shifting health care costs to workers at an accelerated rate. The report says workers paid 30% of the premiums for family coverage and 19% for single coverage. That's the highest rate in 12 years. Worker contributions increased this year by 13.7%, while employer contributions fell by 0.9%. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Who's gonna work for the working man? Work for the working man. Get your hands in the dirt. Who's gonna work off the curse? Brother, I'll be damned if I don't raise a hand. Who's gonna work, work, work for the working man?
Working man. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 304-574-7812. 304-574-7812 is our number here. If you want to give us a call, again, 304 574-7812 is the number if you've got something on your mind. A new Der Spiegel poll in Germany shows 86% of the public want the rich to burden some of the costs of the current economic crisis. One group of concerned millionaires wants to see a wealth tax on Germans with assets over 500,000 euros, about $633,000. Political analysts are predicting that Germany's opposition parties may soon unite to issue a similar wealth tax call. The income tax rate on Germany's tax rate income bracket stands at 42%, down from 53% in 1998. The current U.S. top rate, 35%, unless you're talking about the money that you get sitting on your yacht from dividends. If you sat by the pool and you were drinking margaritas or you're on the yacht looking at bikini-clad babes rolling in those dividend checks, you paid 15%. Thank you, George W. Bush. Again, you know, this is something that we've got to go take back. You know, I'd love to go back to a good socialist president like Dwight David Eisenhower and a tax code that, actually was progressive. The more you made, the larger your shoulders were, the more water that you were asked to carry. Simple stuff. The more resources you have, the more we would expect you to help out with the things that made your wealth. And that's the thing that most people are not getting. The wealthy, the money just didn't come showering down on them. They used our infrastructure. They used our education system. They used our highways and our roads and our bridges and our courts and all of that stuff. But they're not paying their fair share, in my opinion. Can we take a quick call? I guess not. Anyway, we're going to have some interesting things in the next couple of days. Here in our new studio, we're just putting things together, and the phone lines will be in hopefully very soon. We got a call right here. How are we doing tonight?
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Okay, Rick. I was just talking on the horn show to Bob there about this is a fact you're talking about there. Where they want to privatize, i.e., destroy Social Security. The fact is, this corporate phony news media, their interests lie in nothing but endless lies, and they lie in the fact that they lump in Social Security with Medicare and Medicaid. Those programs, they do need to run deficits. We are getting to be an older population there. We have much more toxic corporate food, et cetera, we have to eat there that gives us cancer.
Yep.
We need more health care. But the fact is, the Social Security system there, it's run nothing but surpluses, especially since the libertarian anti-taxer, Alan Greenspan, and Ronald Reagan, well, I never raised anybody's taxes there. Well, ever since the 80s there, the Social Security surplus, the payroll taxes, the American worker, they're the most productive workers on the planet. There's been trillions of dollars stolen from the annual Social Security surplus amounts over those years, Rick, by namely Republican presidents. Remember Al Gore's Social Security lockbox?
The lockbox, certainly.
That patriotic, progressive, and also a rich man, too, named Al Gore. He wanted to do that, and he would have done that. He would have instituted that. And remember, we have to remember the last 3 years of Bill Clinton, as much as they try to make him into yet another overspending Democrat and all that, his budget and his economy was so much more solid and honest growth there than George W. Bush's and his war profiteers ever was. But the fact is, the last 3 years, 98, 99, and 2000, the Clinton administration, the U.S. government budget ran honest surpluses where they didn't have to touch a penny of the American workers' annual Social Security surplus amounts. And the fact is, they keep on getting away with lumping in Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, these people making six figures and higher, these so-called news people there. Bob Perry at consortiumnews.com, that's a real newsman. That's a real worker for the truth. He uses the muscle between his ears, and he searches out the truth about the October surprise, I believe, really happened. That's what got Ronald Reagan into office, his coronation in January 20, 1981, and the payroll tax increases in the 1980s. The American workers are owed those Social Security taxes that they paid into. They're not owed any. They don't deserve any cutbacks in their Social Security. I talked to somebody who's a friend of mine who's a veteran, served many years in the Air Force, and she wants to keep her 100% veterans benefits and all that too. She's a libertarian now, but at the same time, she wants to, she's all for cutting down on Social Security, privatizing it, i.e. handing it over to Wall Street. And I said to her, I told her about the surpluses and the amounts the American workers have paid in to pay for her wars too, for the military's wars. I'm a former Marine. I know about that kind of thing. And the fact is, she wants her full 100% retirement, but she wants to cut that way down on the American workers' Social Security retirement amounts. They're owed, the American workers, they're more than any worker on the planet, they're owed their 100% retirement benefits instead of these cutback talks. And the Social Security lockbox would have been in place had they allowed Al Gore to hold his honestly elected 2000 office in the Florida 2000 elections. I think he would have stopped the September 11th attacks or greatly lessened their extent of their damage and their horrors that they committed on that most evil day in American history. That's what the Republicans are masters at. They distract us with wars, with terror attacks that were allowed for hours for some reason on that day when our NORAD for months and years before that, they got up in the air in less than 10 minutes for just one errant jet. And these were four jumbo jet planes hijacked. Bill Clinton, remember, October 1999, the golfer Payne Stewart's plane there. NORAD had, and Bill Clinton had those fighters up in less than 5 minutes on the tail of that poor doomed golfer's plane.
Yep, he sure
and
did.
That's a suspicious date in American history there. They try to distract us and make us try to blame the other guy, our fellow workers there. Try to look at the race, look at whether they got the proper immigration papers there. Our enemy is not some poor, starving Mexican peasant dying in the desert there south of Arizona. It's the corporations that knowingly hire them by the millions every year, like the Koch brothers. That's who it is.
Absolutely. I agree with you.
God bless you for your show.
I appreciate the call. Thanks so much.
Okay.
And please, call back again. I love the comments. Look, you know, talking about Social Security, and he made a lot of good points there. Social Security is not an entitlement program. It's something we've paid for. They love to limp that into it's like welfare. No, it's not like welfare. It is anti-poverty insurance is what it is. You've paid into the system. You should be able to reap benefits out of it. Now, look. The money has been stolen. You're absolutely right. And Alan Simpson, the Republican senator from Wyoming, said that. Money's gone. It's all gone. We spent it. $2 trillion, all gone. And now they don't want to pay it back. You know, your generation, Jake, was the first generation that was supposed to pay for their own Social Security because your generation, obviously, is the largest generation. The pig was going through the python. It's not my analogy. It's theirs. I'm not calling your generation pigs, but if it fits. But they were going through the python. So the largest tax increase of the history of the world, Reagan imposed on the working people only. Now remember, only $106,000 is taxable under Social Security. If you make $1 million every year, you pay Social Security tax on $106,000. That's it. Now, it's always been my idea that we take the cap off, we lower the rate down to about 5% instead of 13%, we put money back into the pockets of working people in this country, and we move forward. And you know what? If we did that, we would be flush in Social Security cash because there's a lot of money at the top. You know, the teabaggers love to talk about, oh, redistribution of wealth. You want to redistribute my wealth. Hey, dummy. It's been redistributed from me and you and Jake all the way up to the top. Simple stuff. Let's take another call. How are we doing today? Hello, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. You got a question?
Yeah, this is Susan, the news major for the Horn Radio for your show.
Oh, hey, Susan. How are you tonight?
I'm just great. Just a fast observation. If I remember the movie The Young Guns, didn't they all end up dead?
Good point. Yeah, absolutely. Well, now, whoa. I'm not wishing that on them.
Be careful, man.
I'm not wishing that on them. I wish their careers were dead, though.
That's what happened in the movie.
Yeah, I wish their careers to be dead.
I want to direct people to not only your website, but also on your website, as well as your show post on the Horn website, you can pick up your view stream and watch you.
Yeah, you can see us right here in our fabulous new studio that we're just finishing the putting some touches on. I'm telling you, we're going to get the camera leveled. Right now we're leaning a little to the left, and that's on purpose, I think.
Now, I do have a confession to make.
Okay.
I was one of the ones who was saying at one point, I've had it. I'm going to stay home.
No, please don't do that.
And then, no, let me finish. And then one of the networks showed a retrospective on Katrina. And I sat there and I watched George Bush's criminal misconduct all over again. And then I said, sign me up again.
Thank you. Thank you. And look, the reality is we cannot make that giant U-turn. We cannot go back to the policies of George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan. We can't make that giant U-turn. We just can't.
So if people are starting to get to the point where they want to stay home, I suggest they go to YouTube and pull up the news film on Katrina, on all of the early days of Iraq, all of the other horrible disasters that Bush caused, and then
that'll get you out.
Back.
Heck of a job, Brownie. That should bring you back to the polls.
Yeah.
I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Please call again. We're going to take a quick break here. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Leave that first call.
Officially in love with Michelle Bachman, even if she's batshit crazy. Rick Smith. Sometimes I don't know whether to laugh, cry, or go bowling, and this is one of those times. America is now in a great jobs depression that has already lasted 10 years and continues to rage unabated across the land, devastating the middle class. Yet it took 2 months and endless compromises this summer for Senate Democrats to woo a few Republican votes needed to pass even a weak and meek jobs bill to help deter mass firings of school teachers and firefighters by local governments. Pious, purse-lipped Republicans, who have eagerly backed Wall Street bailouts, needless wars, and other budget-busting expenditures, demanded that other programs be cut as the price of saving these essential public service jobs. So what program did our stalwart senators choose to loot? Food stamps. Yes, even as millions of Americans are stuck in long-term, relentless unemployment, thus increasing the urgent need for family assistance, our well-fed, big-budded Solons grabbed nearly $12 billion from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. This puts the dumb in dumbfounding. Because of the economic collapse caused by the reckless greed of Wall Street bankers, there's been a 50% increase in the past 2 years in the number of Americans relying on food stamps. In the coming months, more and more people, including school teachers and firefighters, are going to lose their jobs, and many of them will need the helping hand that Congress has now so stupidly and callously withdrawn. This is Jim Hightower saying, instead of stealing funds from our country's essential food stamp program, Congress should get the money for its jobs bill by taxing the multi-billion-dollar bonuses that Wall Street bankers are paying out to themselves. And if that's not enough money, cut the pay, pensions, and health care freebies that our Congress critters pay to themselves. Most of them could stand to go on a diet anyway. Psst. Here's one book the powers that be definitely don't want you to read.
It's Jim Hightower's rebellious new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Written with co-agitator Susan DeMarco, Swim Against the Current urges all of us to break free of the corporate tentacles and live our progressive values. To show the way, the book tells the stories of grassroots folks who are doing just that in such areas as business, politics, healthcare, food, and religion. Hightower inspires all of us to buck the system. So take the plunge. Swim Against the Current is available now wherever books are sold.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
The Street Dogs. I got to tell you, one of my favorite bands, and they have got a great new album out that I'm looking forward to grabbing. This is the kind of stuff we're going to be talking about from now until eternity, folks. And thank you for the people who called tonight. We look forward to more people calling, more engagement, because that's why we're here. And, in fact, talking about engagement, there is a big rally being planned. I guess there's some people involved. Ed Schultz, I guess, is on board now. 10, I guess, is when it's going to be, October 2nd. The agenda being, hey, we need to help the middle class. We need to do some smart things. We need to extend jobless benefits. We need to extend COBRA. We need to help people who are still losing their homes. We need to target communities that need the help the most. We need to reach out and do things that are going to help bring everybody up. And when we start to spur the economy, look, economies go one of two directions. There's never any stagnation. They're either spiraling up or they're spiraling down. Right now we're moving up slowly. The recovery is slowly happening. We're not losing 700,000 jobs a month like we did when Bush was running out of office. You got a guy who's standing up saying, you know what, we've stopped the worst part of it. We're back from the brink. Now we've got to move forward, but we got to start helping people. And this is what I got to tell the president. Look, the people who are marching in these teabag rallies, these are angry people. And they're angry because they fear that they're losing the American dream. We need to create an environment where they feel that their kids are going to do better than they are. And that's something, Jake, that, you know, has been core to the American values, that I'm working hard. I'm working 40, 50, 60, 100 hours a week so that my kids don't have to.
And sometimes we denigrate them, and I know you've met some of them, and I do get angry at them, some of the things they say, but really their anger and their fears are justified. I'm angry, and I'm fearful of the future. However, they're blaming the wrong people, and they certainly seem to be in huge numbers siding with the people who have the wrong answers, who want us to go back to the old failed policies.
But you look at Becca Palooza last week. You had the big, who knows what that was, some kind of bizarre church revival, I guess, in some twisted way. In his dry, drunk way, I think he means well. Even though he's a little off the, well, that's what happens when people trade one addiction for another. But look, this thing on the second, and I guess Stephen Colbert is doing one on the 10th to bring people out, to energize us, the base. Look, I mean, I know a lot of us are down, and a lot of us are thinking about, you know, this isn't working. It is working. It's working slowly. But it's working. And if we lose this November, if we lose the House, and quite possibly could even up on the Senate, the next 2 years are going to be utter hell. Because all we're going to see is delay, 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 obstruction, and investigation. Do you want to go back to the Monica Lewinsky era, where all we did for a year and a half was talk about address? Do we want to talk about, you know, whatever nonsense Daryl Issa's can come up with? Think about it for a minute. That's all they have, because they think that we're stupid enough to stay home. They think we're dumb enough to go, well, you know what? It just didn't work out. Well, that's not the case, folks.
You know, Rick, you mentioned something about what the Republicans did when Bill Clinton was in with one indictment after the other. The one thing, and Bill Clinton's done several things that I know has angered you, but the one thing that really angered me about Bill Clinton is he made the mistake of allowing the Republicans to talk about the fact that he had an affair outside of marriage, and he lied. And he, for a whole year, the Republicans literally, and you're dead on right, is that what we want to go back to? A whole year, the Republican Congress focused on the impeachment trial, and it centered around Bill Clinton lying instead of addressing the very real problems in this country that we had. And I resented Bill Clinton when he did it, and to this day, I resent him. You talk about a monumental mistake. And although...
Come on. You know, here's the thing. And this is where I'm going to stop you. Because there is not a man on this planet where if you walk up to him with his wife standing next to him and say, you know what, did you have sex with that woman? He's going to say no. My problem with him is that he didn't stick to it. Just say no. No.
I mean, Bill Clinton didn't bear any responsibility.
Of course he did. But that's not, to me, I don't care what he was doing with his Willie. I don't care what he and little Willie were doing.
And on the other hand, let me defend him.
Okay, go ahead.
Just recently I saw him make a speech. Ironically, it was at a Congressman Sustak, who in Pennsylvania, by the way, for those of you who are listening, is running for the U.S. Senate. And Bob Casey, our current senator, was there, and Bill Clinton was there. And ironically, Mr. Sustak had been called back by the Democratic leadership to vote on an important bill. And he made an analogy, and I know we talked about it on your show, and I thought it was brilliant. I think we ought to share it with our listeners. And he said this. He said, when you talk to your Republican friends, tell them this. When you're digging the ditch and you're going deeper and deeper and deeper into a hole, he said, the first thing you got to do is stop digging. He said, you tell your friends that if the Republicans regain power, as they put their one hand on the Bible, the other hand's going to be in that shovel, and they're going to start digging. And that was a brilliant analogy, and he's so right. Republicans are going to put us back to their interpretation of the good old days, to the failed economic policies, and that is going to be an absolute catastrophe for this country.
All right. Yeah, I agree. And there was a lot of drumming there to help out, so good. You made your point with the bongos, and very good. Very good. Anyway, we're gonna wrap things up tonight. Tomorrow we will be back at 9 o'clock. We look forward to everyone coming back, participating in the program. Remember, rick@thericksmithshow.com is my email address, thericksmithshow.com, our website. We look forward to all the engagement and the wonderful things that I think we're going to do here on the Horn. And again, I want to thank Bob Kincaid. I want to thank all the good people at the Horn for bringing us on and giving us this opportunity to reach out and begin to take back the message. Because if we don't stand up right now, if we don't say no way, no how are we turning around, we are not going to make a U-turn into the wrong lane again. We're not going to go back to where we came from. We can save this country. I'm telling you right now, if the Republicans gain control of both the House and the Senate, we are going to be in major trouble. Because remember, for a year and a half, they investigated Bill Clinton. A year and a half. And what happened when Bush took office? We ended up with 9/11. Why? Because we took our eyes off the ball. We spent all of our time investigating, and we spent very little time doing the things that we needed to do, A, to protect this country, and B, to move us forward. And I'm telling you, if it happens in November, we are going to go back to those days. They've already said it. It's going to happen. But thank you for being here tonight. We will be back tomorrow night at 9 o'clock right here on the Head On Radio Network. This has been the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming from a field, but this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the game.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
With Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Labor Day edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. Glad to have you along. I don't know who else has been live today, but by God, I am. It's always fun to be at it, you know, be live when everybody else is, when everybody else is, you know, taking a break. We had our fun over the weekend, more or less. Made a nice little dinner on the grill. You know, if you haunt the manager's specials, you can often find some real tasties. And in this case, it was pork loin chops instead of like doing the whole barbecue and stuff. Just hickory smoked them with a little marinade. Yum yum yum, tasty. Jonathan made a very filling and very inexpensive Labor Day brunch for the family today. That was a lot of fun. Let's see, what did I call it? Yeah. Jambalaya quesadillas. Yeah, why not? You know? And you know what? It was real good. I guess I could have called it Cajun fried rice too, but with the tortilla there, it kind of had to be a quesadilla. But anyway, it is Labor Day, and this is the live Labor Day edition of The Horn. And Labor Day always falls on a Monday, doesn't it? That means something else, too, doesn't it? Yeah, it kind of does. It's besides being Labor Day, I guess we just get a kind of a double dose, or a double dip, if you will. That's right! It's Moran Monday on the Horn! Hurry, 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 step right up! You will see behind these thin canvas curtains, or here, because this is, after all, radio. Moran after Moran after Moran. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. The right-wing Morans are out in force over this holiday weekend. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we got some Morans. We got individual political Morans. We've got a website Moran. Oh, this one's going to be fun. I only heard about this website Moran in like the last minute or so. We got Morans. Jan Brewer is a Moran, but like you didn't know that. And in a way, I think you could even say that Maximum Generalissimo David Petraeus has his own nominee for this evening. General Petraeus is not at all happy about the Dove World Church and their plan to burn Qurans. So we have two sets of Morans. We have the Dove World Church, and we have the people who get real pissed off when a book gets burned because they think it's holy. See, I get real pissed off when a book gets burned because burning books is like burning brains. It's where we deposit our knowledge as human beings. And I think, you know, that's really a nasty, nasty thing to do, burning books. But if you're getting all bent about, it's our holy book, Jeebus! Oh, not Jeebus, somebody else! Well, there's some Morans. Listen, Moran Monday knows no religious boundaries.
Moran Monday knows no ethnic boundaries. Moran Monday knows no political boundaries. But General Petraeus has said, no kidding, that this Quran burning could put the lives of American troops in danger and damage the war effort. Well, I don't think you can do much more damage to the war effort. It is, after all, Afghanistan. Every time I see a map of that place, it just makes my head hurt. Why are we there? I mean, that's a whole Moran topic for the, that's years worth of Moranity. Why we're there, and why figuring out that maybe it's not the best thing in the world to be there. Why we haven't come home? Why we started it? Why we stayed there? Why we're not home? It's 11-dimensional Moran. Yeah, the fact of the matter is, hundreds of Afghans have been throwing a fit today in Kabul. Yeah, they've been protesting the United States. You know, death to America, death to the great Satan. And they've been calling for President Barack Obama's death. I'm sure they've issued some, you know, some semi-literate freak has issued a fatwa on him. All because Dove World Church plans to torch some Qurans. See, here we are. You, me, we're normal. We're ordinary. We're going about our daily business. We're living our lives. But over in this corner, you've got the Dove World Church and their theocratic preacher, and he wants to burn Qurans. And over there in the other corner, you've got a bunch of pissed off Muslims in Afghanistan who don't want their Quran burnt. Tastes great, meat less filling. Meh. It's not, you know. Stop it! I'm going to get myself in trouble. But yeah, the fact of the matter is, the U.S. Embassy in Kabul issued a statement saying it was, quote, deeply concerned about deliberate attempts to offend members of religious or ethnic groups. Meanwhile, those members of those religion and ethnic groups have issued a statement, these being Afghans, quote, we know this is not just the decision of a church. It is the decision of the president and the entire United States, said Abdul Shakur, an 18-year-old high school student who said he joined the protest after hearing neighborhood gossip about the Quran burning. Yeah, I know. Because he knows. Talk about a guy who can't get a break. Over here, Whitey is pretty sure that Barack Obama was born in Kenya or maybe Mars. And over there, some 18-year-old semi-literate, poverty-stricken, miserable moron is quite sure that Barack Obama will be there to throw the first match. I mean, poor Barack Obama is rapidly approaching Rodney Dangerfield status. No respect. Morans. God, I hate him. Jesus. Yeah, poor David Vitter. Talk about Rodney Dangerfield. Poor Diaper Dave Vitter. He's got a big lead over his opponent in November's race. But even so, Piyush Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, won't endorse him. Maybe he thinks that he just doesn't need it. So, yeah. Morans. Oh, we've got morans. We are. We are up to our armpits in Morans. We have a nomination, a Moran nomination, if you will. This one came in from our buddy Corey in Louisville. See, I said it right. Louisville. You know, it's almost like you're just kind of grunt. Louisville. He sent this in early, Corey did. It came in 2 days ago, as a matter of fact. Nominee for Moran Monday, Jack Conway, the guy who's about to get teabagged by Rand Paul, is my nominee, says Corey. He's about to get teabagged by Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Corey notes, and I say that with great sadness, but it is the truth. Because how big of a moron must you be when Paul is making mistake after error after gaffe, and you don't make ads out of them and don't keep bringing them up at appearances, and you don't get aggressive in the media? The most accurate poller in the state, Survey USA, released its poll Saturday and showed Conway down 55 to 40. That's 15 points, if my math on the fly is correct, and I do believe it is. Corey says, this is the most toxic candidate to the blue-collar workers in Kentucky, and there are lots of them, and the miners of the eastern and western coal fields. And Paul leads Conway by 8 points in the very blue Louisville area. Hear that again. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is leading Jack Conway in the bluest area in the entire state of Kentucky, namely Louisville. Corey says, next time someone calls us a bunch of stupid hill jacks in Kentucky, I'm not arguing. You can't when you're about to elect a guy worse than Jim Bunning as your senator. That's frustrating. Equally frustrating, in a totally different way, of course, they're playing with my mind. I sat down to watch my beloved Mountaineers play the ferocious Chanticleers, no, really, the Chanticleers, of Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina, the Chanticleers. Go, Chanticleers, go! Division I AA school. There weren't much game. But, you know, Mountaineer. No, this is not the sports part of the program. You can leave your computers tuned to the horn. But I sat down to watch the game, and you know, I've got my little nibbles, and, you know, got me an ice-cold can of beer open. It's football Saturday, by God! It's like going to Mass and not having the wine and the cracker. Chips and beer, you know? And I sit down to watch it, and what do I get every, you know, 10 minutes or so? The liberals and environmentalists are after coal in West Virginia. I'm John Racy, and I'll stand up to that Negro in Washington, I will. If he could have said it, he would have. You just look at his weird little right-wing face, and you know that he's just bubbling up. Just absolutely bubbling up with his little Laura Schlesinger moment. You just have a bourbon. Have a bourbon, Mr. Racy. Have another. Oh, take the bottle. Now tell us what you think about Barack Obama. That's sorry, no good, shiftless. You know how it goes. But here's the part that made me want to scream. And this was too good for... This was just too good. Joe Manchin has been...
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal.
Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Labor Day edition of The Horn. I'm Bob. Glad to have you along. I don't know who else has been live today, but by God, I am. It's always fun to be, you know, be live when everybody else is, when everybody else is, you know, taking a break. We had our fun over the weekend, more or less. Made a nice little dinner on the grill. You know, if you haunt the manager's specials, you can often find some real tasties. And in this case, it was pork loin chops instead of like doing the whole barbecue and stuff. No, just hickory smoked them with a little marinade. And, yum yum yum, tasty. Got up and made a very filling and very inexpensive Labor Day brunch for the family today. That was a lot of fun. Let's see, what did I call it? Jambalaya quesadillas. Yeah, why not? You know? And you know what? It was real good. I guess I could have called it Cajun fried rice too, but with the tortilla there, it kind of had to be a quesadilla. But anyway, it is Labor Day, and this is the live Labor Day edition of The Horn. And Labor Day always falls on a Monday, doesn't it? That means something else, too, doesn't it? Yeah, it kind of does. It's besides being Labor Day, I guess we just get a kind of a double dose, or a double dip, if you will. That's right! It's Moran Monday on the Horn! Hurry, 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 step right up. You will see behind these thin canvas curtains, or here, because this is, after all, radio. Moran after Moran after Moran. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. The right-wing Morans are out in force over this holiday weekend. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we got some Morans. We got individual political Morans. We've got a website Moran. Oh, this one's going to be fun. I only heard about this website Moran in, like, the last minute or so. We got Morans. Jan Brewer is a Moran, but, like, you didn't know that. And in a way, I think you could even say that Maximum Generalissimo David Petraeus has his own nominee for this evening. General Petraeus is not at all happy about the Dove World Church and their plan to burn Qurans. So we have two sets of Morans. We have the Dove World Church, and we have the people who get real pissed off when a book gets burned. Because they think it's holy. See, I get real pissed off when a book gets burned because burning books is like burning brains. It's where we deposit our knowledge as human beings. And I think, you know, that's really a nasty, nasty thing to do, burning books. But if you're getting all bent about, it's our holy book, Jeebus! No, not Jeebus, somebody else! Well, there's some Morans. Listen, Moran Monday knows no religious boundaries. Moran Monday knows no ethnic boundaries. Moran Monday knows no political boundaries. But General Petraeus has said, no kidding, that this Quran burning could put the lives of American troops in danger and damage the war effort. Well, I don't think you can do much more damage to the war effort. It is, after all, Afghanistan.
Every time I see a map of that place, it just makes my head hurt. Why are we there? I mean, that's a whole Moran topic for the, that's years worth of Moranity. Why we're there, and why figuring out that maybe it's not the best thing in the world to be there? Why we haven't come home? Why we started it? Why we stayed there? Why we're not home? It's 11-dimensional Moran. Yeah, the fact of the matter is, hundreds of Afghans have been throwing a fit today in Kabul. Yeah. They've been protesting the United States, you know, death to America, death to the great Satan, blah, 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 blah. And they've been calling for President Barack Obama's death. I'm sure they've issued some, you know, some semi-literate freak has issued a fatwa on him. All because Dove World Church plans to torch some Qurans. See, here we are. You, me, we're normal. We're ordinary. We're going about our daily business. We're living our lives. But over in this corner, you've got the Dove World Church and their theocratic preacher. And he wants to burn Qurans. And over there in the other corner, you've got a bunch of pissed off Muslims in Afghanistan who don't want their Quran burnt. Tastes great. Meat less filling. Meh. It's not, you know. Stop it. I'm going to get myself in trouble. But yeah, the fact of the matter is, the U.S. Embassy in Kabul issued a statement saying it was, quote, deeply concerned about deliberate attempts to offend members of religious or ethnic groups. Meanwhile, those members of those religion and ethnic groups have issued a statement, these being Afghans, quote, we know this is not just the decision of a church. It is the decision of the president and the entire United States, said Abdul Shakur, an 18-year-old high school student who said he joined the protest after hearing neighborhood gossip about the Quran burning. Yeah, I know. Because he knows. Talk about a guy who can't get a break. Over here, Whitey is pretty sure that Barack Obama was born in Kenya or maybe Mars. And over there, some 18-year-old semi-literate, poverty-stricken, miserable moron is quite sure that Barack Obama will be there to throw the first match. I mean, poor Barack Obama is rapidly approaching Rodney Dangerfield status. No respect. Morans. God, I hate him. Jesus. Yeah, poor David Vitter. Talk about Rodney Dangerfield. Poor Diaper Dave Vitter. He's got a big lead over his opponent in November's race. But even so, Piyush Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, won't endorse him. Maybe he thinks that he just doesn't need it. So, yeah. Morans. Oh, we've got morans. We are. We are up to our armpits in morans. We have a nomination. A Moran nomination, if you will. This one came in from our buddy Corey in Louisville. See, I said it right. Louisville. You know, it's almost like you're just kind of grunting. Louisville. He sent this in early. Corey did. Came in 2 days ago, as a matter of fact.
nominee for More and Monday, Jack Conway, the guy who is about to get teabagged by Rand Paul, is my nominee, says Corey. He's about to get teabagged by Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Corey notes, and I say that with great sadness, but it is the truth. Because how big of a moron must you be when Paul is making mistake after error after gaffe, and you don't make ads out of them and don't keep bringing them up at appearances, and you don't get aggressive in the media? The most accurate poller in the state survey USA released its poll Saturday and showed Conway down 55 to 40. That's 15 points, if my math on the fly is correct, and I do believe it is. Corey says, this is the most toxic candidate to the blue-collar workers in Kentucky, and there are lots of them, and the miners of the eastern and western coal fields. And Paul leads Conway by 8 points in the very blue Louisville area. Hear that again. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is leading Jack Conway in the bluest area in the entire state of Kentucky, namely Louisville. Corey says, next time someone calls us a bunch of stupid hill jacks in Kentucky, I'm not arguing. You can't when you're about to elect a guy worse than Jim Bunning as your senator. That's frustrating. Equally frustrating, in a totally different way, of course, they're playing with my mind. I sat down to watch my beloved Mountaineers play the ferocious Chanticleers, no, really, the Chanticleers, of Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina, the Chanticleers. Go, Chanticleers, go! Division I AA school. There weren't much game. But, you know, Mountaineer. No, this is not the sports part of the program. You can leave your computers tuned to the horn. But I sat down to watch the game, and I've got my little nibbles, and, you know, got me an ice-cold can of beer open. It's football Saturday, by God! It's like going to Mass and not having the wine and the cracker. Chips and beer, you know? And I sit down to watch it, and what do I get every, 10 minutes or so? The liberals and environmentalists are after coal in West Virginia. I'm John Racy, and I'll stand up to that Negro in Washington, I will. If he could have said it, he would have. You just look at his weird little right-wing face, and you know that he's just bubbling up. Just absolutely bubbling up with his little Laura Schlesinger moment. You just have a bourbon. Have a bourbon, Mr. Rich. Have another. Oh, take the bottle. Now tell us what you think about Barack Obama. That's sorry, no good, shiftless. You know how it goes. But here's the part that made me want to scream. And this was too good for... This was just too good. Joe Manchin has been toeing the line for the liberal elite in Washington, including Barack Obama, for far too long. Really? Really? I'm a pretty informed little old liberal here in West Virginia, and last I checked, no, Joe's not real crazy about Barack Obama. He certainly didn't bust his ass to get out there on the hustings and campaign for him. Just like he didn't campaign for John Kerry, just like he didn't campaign, just like he didn't campaign, just like he didn't campaign, because the only person Joe Manchin campaigns for is Joe Manchin. That's a Manchin family tenet. The only people Manchin's campaign for is other Manchins. But no, I was bombarded. Trying to enjoy a football game, I'm going to have to go somewhere and watch it on satellite. So maybe I don't get that. I don't have the money to bring satellite in here. But just so maybe I don't have to get those filthy friend of coal ads, because the election's November 2nd, and that means practically every blessed game is going to be buried in this coal filth. Blech! And it's a double blech when you see that they're trying to paint Joe Manchin as a liberal. I'm a liberal. I know other liberals. Joe Manchin is no liberal. But it's the same story all over the country. Because that's all the right wing's got, and that's all, and they realize that that's all they need. All they've got to do is tap into Whitey's hatred, and they think that they'll be fine. And what's kind of terrifying is the fact that they may be correct. You know, when you see the video of that was shot at the White Stock, and you see that one and you see that one video of the pasty faced white guy says, "You know, now I understand how the Indians felt when the white people came over here." He's talking about the Muslims. At which point I was reaching for the gin bottle. I really know how they feel now that I see these Muslims coming over here. And then the next clip of him or his wife or whomever saying, "I really hate Barack Obama because he's divided us so much. We were together on 9/11. We was all standing together. And Barack Obama's divided us." Imagine that. He's divided an entire nation solely by being sort of an off-coffee shade of skin tone. Breathtaking, isn't it? Yeah, it is. But Barack Obama does give a good speech. You got to give him that. He gave one of those world beaters up in Milwaukee today. I don't know, maybe we'll listen to it in a little bit. It's entirely possible. But there's all kinds of stuff on the plate this evening. And it's all over the place. Let's see. Obama revs into campaign mode in Wisconsin. That was the CBS headline. And there's some polling data out there that indicates that no matter how disgusted we may be with politics as it exists, the American people still kind of know where it's coming from. And here's the hint. They recognize that it's not entirely Barack Obama's fault. So there's that. There has been a sighting out on the horizon. You remember who J.C. Watts was? The only black Republican in the House of Representatives? His replacement has been sighted out on the horizon. He comes from South Carolina, and he will likely be elected to Congress in November. This guy's a real Lulu. Tim Scott. And a prophecy update, if you will. If you'll pardon me getting out the tattered and frayed purple velvet robes with the sort of halfway falling off applique, shiny moon and stars on them. A follow-up to James J. Lee, the Discovery Channel hostage taker. And this is a surefire media Moran Monday nominee. Maybe we should just grandfather out the Fox Network too. But why? Well, okay, we're going to do this. So the Fox, do you remember the other night when I read you Charlotte Mizowitz's miserable little PR pitch, for which I criticized her, and she wrote back that she was just a poor widow woman trying to make money by doing what her boss said. Remember that? And I said, and at the time I said, because it's true, I don't have to speculate, I don't have to guess. I said that Ms. Mizowitz's little blast would make it around the informosphere,
or perhaps the sleazosphere. And that while I was refusing to make use of her allegation that James J. Lee was obviously influenced by Al Gore, that somebody would take them up on it. Now remember this, because this is important. You and I, we went through the entirety of James J. Lee's manifesto, didn't we? I'm pretty sure we did. We did. I'm certain of it. I remember reading it. And you'll recall that there was nothing in there about Al Gore. There was nothing in there about an Inconvenient Truth or former vice presidents or Nobel laureates or nothing. We read the whole thing. Nothing in there about Al Gore. But the other side's megaphone is so well-funded and thoroughly staffed with widow women raising two children by doing what their boss says, that the thing can go around the world, and the next thing you know, an attack blonde on Fox or some goofy idiot like Steve Doocy is blathering on, repeating her word for word. It's got to be gratifying to be Charlotte Mizowitz. She types up some filth on her computer and hits send to her recipients. And the next thing you know, goofy Steve Doocy or some attack blonde on Fox is repeating her words, and she's like Albert Brooks in Broadcast News, looking at William Hurt on the television going, "That's funny, I see it here, it comes out there." You'll see what I mean in a minute. I wish I was kidding.
A bizarre hours-long hostage situation on the Discovery Channel and that building. Now we know the gunman's extreme environmentalist views may have been sparked by an Al Gore documentary. Where's the media outrage there? Would they be silent if the tables were turned with a different...
Well, they have thus far. I never did get around... Yeah, I did. I read you Jim David Guy, Adkisson's manifesto about his killings in... Tennessee that were, James J. Lee didn't kill anybody, but Jim Adkisson did, and he had a house full of right-wing Blatherfest books, but no, nobody really said anything about it. There were certainly no indictments handed down, but on Fox, they were ready to pounce, thanks largely, I suspect, to the work of Charlotte Mizowitz, a widow raising two children, by pumping out right-wing filth day in and day out.
Documentary with a different point of view. Eric? The big story yesterday afternoon was the hostage crisis. Just when you have a format, something like this happens in breaking news, and we heard Shepard Smith trying to figure out what was happening on satellite radio yesterday was absolutely a challenge. We understand, and now we know for sure, that that man decided that he had one thing that he could do to save the planet and get his point across, and that's take over the Discovery Channel building in Maryland.
Are you talking about James Lee, a 43-year-old
yes.
man who apparently was from San Diego, California?
Go attack, blonde, go!
He had had a sordid past with the Discovery Channel. He apparently had set up a big protest there back in 2008. He was actually in jail for a short period of time.
See, they went out on a date, and James J. Lee sat back at home, and the Discovery Channel never called, never wrote. He was a stalker. He was stalking the Discovery Channel.
For violating, I believe, efforts to keep him away from this property. So the people at Discovery knew who he was. But here's the thing. He apparently became some sort of an environmentalist junkie after he watched...
Oh, that's nice. An environmentalist junkie. Now, this is important because she's just called him an environmentalist junkie. Okay, environmentalist, I get. I understand that word. That is a word that was invented by right-wingers at least two-thirds of a generation ago to describe people who cared about the planet and about the people living on the planet and the environment in which they live. Environmentalist was not, to the best of my knowledge, a phrase that was invented by the so-called environmentalist community. It's another one of those names that they hung on us and stuck. But he's not just an environmentalist, he's an environmentalist junkie. Are we to understand, Fox Attack Blonde, that he that had a gun in one hand and in the other arm was a heroin-filled syringe running into his arm? Is that what you mean, Fox Attack Blonde? He was an environmentalist junkie.
vice president, former vice president's movie, Inconvenient Truth, Al Gore's movie. He became a radical environmentalist. But that is not necessarily how all of the news media are talking about this gentleman today.
You look at some of the things he was demanding of the Discovery Channel. One of them, TLC must stop encouraging the birth of any more parasitic human infants. The guy was nuts.
So no more births.
The question was, did he become nuts watching Al Gore's movie? And the other question is, it's amazing that he didn't shoot himself during the movie instead.
Yeah, because he was so nuts he didn't know the business end of a gun like a good Second Amendment worshiping right-winger would. Oh, damn, that's funny. That's amazing he did. Because he's a stupid environmentalist. He's probably going to beat people to death with the butt of that pistol.
But if somebody said, hey, I'm worshiping some conservative icon, or let's say that they were a fan of a major Republican player, would that be played up?
Or Glenn Beck. Or Michael Savage. Or Rush Limbaugh. Or Bill O'Reilly. Or Sean Hannity. Because, you see, Sean Hannity, Michael Savage, and Bill O'Reilly all appeared on the bookshelf of, who? Yeah, Mr. Adkisson in Tennessee, who, unlike Mr. Lee, who didn't kill anybody, actually killed two people before he was wrestled to the ground by them sissy, panty-waisted liberals. Right? You see how these false equivalencies work? And it's important for me to note that, again, we read the manifesto, and there was, the only book referenced in there was a book about a telepathic gorilla. That's it. Nothing more. But Charlotte Misiewicz, and apparently others, but Charlotte Misiewicz is the only one I saw sending out such a filthy email, immediately connected James J. Lee to Al Gore. Now, I've run a minute and 48 seconds of this audio for you, and you have never heard them cite exactly where they get the idea that he was connected to Al Gore. Here's the fun part. We can watch the other 3 minutes of this, and you won't hear that either. You won't hear it there either. You know why? Not to put too fine a point on it, but you won't hear it there because it isn't there. This is the Fox style book in all its in all its putrid glory. And I would be horribly remiss if I didn't note that once again this post at Crooks and Liars comes to us from my good friend Dave Nyward, who is the go-to guy on eliminationism. And on the ways that the media, the way that Fox News capitalizes on misery. Because you see, Emery and Eileen are sitting at home in their matching Barca loungers, and they're watching Steve Dubley and generic attack blonde, whomever she may be. Maybe it's Gretchen Carlson. I don't know. But there's so many, I can't keep up with the attack blondes. And they're looking at, wait, you see there, Marlene? Them tree huggers has found where the guns is sold, and now ain't none of us safe. And they're trying to take down our beloved Discovery Channel, where we learned about the aliens what built them pyramids down in Mexico, and is going to destroy the world in 2012. I'm so glad we've got our stockpile of survivor seeds and we bought our food insurance. Oh, Marlene, I just love you that much that I was willing to do it. Because them environmentalists, they's going to be the ruin of any decent place any of us has left to live. Them environmentalists.
All across the span of the media, from the blogs to the newspapers on down. Instead, you see, if you read this story, even though this was he claims it was this nut job, claims as his foundation for going off the reservation, Al Gore's movie, there seems to be an effort to push that.
See the allegation? Now, it's entirely possible I missed something. Somebody will send it to me if I did.
Well, Bob, you know, you missed the big media interview that he gave after he was taken down and arrested and put in the straitjacket, where he said, "I'd like to thank Al Gore. You love me. You really love me." You missed that part, Bob, but see, I read the manifesto. Just like we read Atkinson's manifesto. Because that's how you make the judgment. And there's nothing. I mean, if anything, all the immigration stuff in there, that's straight out of Hannity. That's straight out of Beck. That's straight out of Savage. I think the word vermin appears in the manifesto of James J. Lee. And unless I'm mistaken, probably the most frequent user of the word vermin on over-the-air terrestrial radio is, in fact, Michael the Savage Wiener. Just say it.
Linkage down and away. Now it's time for our weekly visit with Michelle Malkin. She's a syndicated columnist, Fox News contributor, and always...
Oh, goody, the anchor baby!
...we need to get from you. First off, Michelle, whatever we had as your topic number one, move to number two. When we saw what took place...
Yeah, Michelle, move to number two. Because everything that comes out of your mouth now is going to be number two. These guys not even pay attention to the words coming out of their mouth. Do they mean to make it this easy for me? I think I don't know.
Yesterday afternoon, live on Fox News, where this lunatic took over the Discovery Channel building over in Maryland and claimed that as his main motivation, Al Gore and his movie, Inconvenient Truth.
How many times have they said that now? That's at least three, maybe four times. Claimed as his main motivation, Al Gore. Jeebus. So, somebody, you know, but wait, this would not, I mean, this is a Moran Monday nomination, so we've got to kind of do it, because it wouldn't be right to leave the anchor baby, Michelle Malkin, without her being able to open her mouth and pour out some number two.
Where's this guy coming from, and how do you think this has been played out right now as we read about this story and hear about this story today?
Yeah, well, clearly this guy had more than a few screws loose. He had been on the radar screen of Discovery and local police and law enforcement there for quite a while, had many grievances built up, and clearly embraced a radical and environmental agenda and ideology. But I'm going to do something that...
Then where does the immigration stuff come in? Because that's not, and as Dave Nywert notes in his post at Crooks and Liars, that's not part of any environmental point of which I'm aware. There might be a couple of loopies out there talking about that stuff, but not, no. For the most part, I mean, I've been involved in the environmental movement for a while now, and I've never heard any of that stuff talked. Not to say that I know everything that's being said, but really... I hear most of the mainstream stuff. But wait, he was a radical environmentalist. Maybe you only get to come in and listen to the filthy anchor baby lesson. Anchor baby? Yeah, he used that in his manifesto. Maybe you only get to come in and hear about the anchor babies after you've, you know, gotten, I don't know, your radical environmentalist merit badge.
Enemies and opponents on the other side rarely do, and that is to make clear that
her enemies and opponents. She's going to say something that her enemies and opponents on the other side rarely do. Enemies? Really? See, they can't resist going to the. They can't resist using the rhetoric of violence. Her enemies? Really? We're not all Americans anymore? And she has enemies who are Americans? Opponents? Yes. But you'll note, and this is one of those psychology moments to which, and I will gladly defer to Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, she uses the word enemies before she uses the word opponents. In fact, using the word opponent is an afterthought. But anyway, what's she going to say?
Gore is not responsible for this. An inconvenient truth certainly is an incitement to stupidity and an incitement to massive, costly government intervention, but it is not, and it was never intended to be, an incitement to violence. Now, unfortunately, you cannot find...
Unfortunately, you cannot say that about Michael Savage, about Sean Hannity, about Rush Limbaugh, about the Bill O'Reilly, about Glenn Beck, or all the other second-tier yammerheads. You can't say that about them. They incite violence every day. She is making a valid point. There's a big difference between inciting violence and not inciting violence. It's kind of like the difference between, I don't know, a parrot and a newspaper. There's really no resemblance between the two. Al Gore does a movie in which he says our planet is very much imperiled and we face a real crisis and there's some bad shit coming if we don't do something about it. And Michael Savage writes a book called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder in which he argues that filthy, verminous immigrants are coming and bringing diseases and you've got to do something about it. And you know, Hannity and Limbaugh and O'Reilly and Beck talk about, you know, the dirty progressives and Beck incites a guy to put on a bulletproof vest and go out and go after the Tides Foundation. I agree with anchor baby Michelle Malkin. There is a big difference.
Same sense of fairness from the other side. I mean, just last week, Brian, we were talking about how all of these leftist bloggers had indicted unfairly and falsely the right and the Tea Party for a flashing of the Muslim cap there. And you see this every time there's an act of violence that involves some sort of nutball, they're at the ready to indict the right. And
only because there's evidence indicating that the right was involved. You see, there's a difference. Now, granted, it's not a difference that Emery and Eileen, or Marlene, he may have more than one wife, I'm not sure, I'll have to check. It's not a difference that Emery and Eileen could sort of dope out on their own, sitting there in their matching Barca loungers. But it is a difference, a very real difference. Very real indeed.
Shut up conservative bloggers and Fox News and every Republican leader. And I'm so sick of that kind of blame game. And it also obscures in...
Once again, it's a game to Michelle Malkin. It's a game. It's a game. Two innocents lie dead, buried... in East Tennessee. The other congregants from that day have had their worlds changed forever by a madman influenced by, directly, by right-wing blatherheads, right-wing riot insiders, incitementists. Is that a new word? On the other hand, they have to make up a connection to Al Gore? Because Charlotte Misiewicz said so? Huh?
In this particular case, that there are people who incite people to eco-terrorism. It is a grave problem. The FBI has talked about it for a long time.
Have they talked about it as long as they've talked about right-wing terrorism, Michelle? Because I think you were part of the hissy that was had early in the year when the former W. Bush administration's Justice Department report about right-wing terrorism came out, and you were shocked, shocked. You felt like you were being singled out. Because you're a hate monger, but, you know, who the hell am I, right? But it goes on like that, ad infinitum. A big thanks to our buddy Dave Nyhart for getting that out there. She is a piece of work, that Michelle Malkin. So it is Moran Monday on the Horn, but it's also Labor Day. And it's also a very special day for the Horn itself. Because following this program, immediately, you know, don't touch your dials. I don't know, you may have to refresh, who knows. But immediately following this program, you will hear the initial weeknight broadcast live of the Rick Smith Show. Now, it may only be an hour or so. The first week or so, they're sort of working out kinks. I remember when we did this, too. and there may be some bugs involved. It may not be entirely perfect, but, you know, what is? The Rick Smith Show will be coming your way at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Don't touch that dial. Because, as Rick noted, what he's developing is an opportunity for you to scare the living bejesus. Not with threats of violence, but with talk of hope. Talk of real solutions for the problems that this country faces. And the people that you will be talking to eventually when he goes hot on terrestrial radio, those folks have never heard you before. So we need a really, really strong horn commitment to the Rick Smith Show and to helping Rick get off to a good start. I don't know if he'll even be taking calls tonight, but check it out, and check it out each succeeding night. I think you will be glad you will. I've also set it up. I made contact with Ben Birch over the weekend to make sure that the Rick Smith Show will be set up for podcasting and archiving. So all those nights that I've sort of run over by a few minutes, those days are gone. This has to be over by about 8 p.m. and 59 minutes and about 50 seconds at the very least. So that takes a little bit of time out of our conversation, but not a whole heck of a lot. So that's a wonderful thing. And by the way, since we are early in the month of September, it's only the 6th so far, I got to thinking, and if this works out, it would be beautiful. Here's what we need. And this is reasonably, relatively easy. And I say that as a person who doesn't have two nickels to rub together. We are looking for, and God, I wish I had something to send you. I wish I did. We'll try to figure out some way to do that. Something, just some token of our appreciation. But right now it's impossible. Simply because we, you know, it's such a cash-strapped nightmare to survive. But what we're looking for, and I think this is doable, and I've never mentioned any, I've mentioned it sort of generically before, but never actually put it out there. You know, there's a subscription box at the Horn. And I am so grateful to everybody who has, in fact, subscribed so that they will, so that we know that there's some money coming in every month that we can kind of account for. But at any rate, what I think would be kind of cool to see if we can round up, if you guys can do it, because we've got a big audience, and for the most part a very small contingent, does most of the carrying of the weight. We've got an audience that measures in thousands, and mostly for the 40, 50, maybe 60 on a good month, folks do all the contributing to keep it going. Everybody else just rides. Well, let's see if we can do something kind of novel. I want to create, no, I don't want to create, it's just a suggestion, you'll be the ones who create it. I want to create the Thrifty 250. The Thrifty 250 is 250 members of the Horn family who have $10 every month that they can commit to the Horn. Because if we get 250 subscribers at $10 a piece, that will mean that we make our monthly goal every month. And it will enable me to shut up. The Thrifty 250. 250 people, $10 a month. You know, I broke that down. That's $2.50 a week. That's about 50 cents a show. 50 cents? Let's see. Let me break that down. Let me turn that into an hourly rate for me as if I were getting paid. 50 cents, 3 and 5, 1 time with that, 3, 3, 5, 3, 2, 3, and 26. It's about 16 cents an hour for me. By the time you factor in John Fox and Ben Birch, That takes it down to 5 cents an hour. So here's the question. Is the labor of John Fox, me, Ben Birch, everybody who works to make all of this go, is it worth a nickel an hour? I ask you this because it's Labor Day. Is the horn worth a nickel an hour? Less than a nickel an hour. Not $5 an hour. Not $50 an hour. Is the horn worth a nickel an hour? A nickel an hour. 5 cents for every 60 minutes? Jesus, what is there out there that you can even buy for a nickel an hour? Well, if you become one of the thrifty 250, that's what you will have done. For less than a nickel an hour, you will have made sure that the horn continues to exist for everyone, not just for yourself. Remember, we're on this side of the debate where we believe in providing for each other and taking care of one another. There are people out there who listen to this who cannot afford to contribute, and a lot of you contribute, and you carry those folks part of the equation. And on their behalf, I thank you, and on my own as well, and all of us at the horn, we thank you. So there it is. And you know what? If we get that nifty 350, this is the one thing I can do. You tell me how you want to be listed, and I'll see if I can't talk John Fox into creating a little box on the Horn main page. And we will, by God, list however you wish to be listed. And this includes all contributors, not just this new idea. You send me an email to bobkincaid@gmail.com and tell me how you want to be listed. And the nifty 250... And we're including present contributors in this as well. The nifty 250 will be there for everybody to see who comes to the website so that they can know who it is that keeps this all going and how it is that this all goes, and know for a fact that this is media that is not controlled by the Citizens United corporate power money structure, and that it is in fact media that is made by people for people, and that it shall not perish from the internet. What do you think? I think that's kind of a cool idea. Let me know. The nifty 250. I'm kind of fond of it. So we'll take a little break and come back to your phone calls. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. This is a special Labor Day edition of The Horn. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, America's listener-supported liberal voice. I'm Bob, and we'll be back.
Time we had a break from it.
see, that's if you pay attention to right-wing media, like Fox and Hate Radio and so forth, you begin to feel like that after a while. That, of course, is a classic track from the Blue Oyster Cult. From Blue Oyster Cult, not the Blue Oyster Cult. From Blue Oyster Cult. Veterans of the Psychic Wars. Yeah. Let these shakes go on. How the feeling? It's what, oh my God, you should have, see, I wasn't fit to come on the air the first time I got around to seeing Michelle Malkin. And I don't know who said it in the chat room, but I love the idea. Take Michelle Malkin, put her in a hijab, and march her into a teabag rally and see how long she lasts. Even while she's screaming, but I'm one of you! Jesus, there wouldn't be anything left of little tiny bits of anchor baby. You know I'm right. You know it's true. What would you pay? Michelle Malkin, hijab, teabagger rally. Whew, that'd be good. That would be good. I mean, we saw what happened when a guy just wandered into the 9/11 the 9/11 Ground Zero rally with the beanie on his head. I'm sure the beanie has a real name. I'm sorry, I don't know it. They went right after him. Holy cow, you know. So let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so did you have a good holiday?
Yeah, it was quiet, you know.
Yeah.
It was pleasant. Did up some manager's special pork chops and, you know, had a good time.
Oh, that's good, yeah. Yeah, few pops.
Oh, yeah, here and there.
Yeah. Hey, listen. So,
unfortunately, I could not beer away the clean coal and Joe Manchin is a liberal ads on the Mountaineer game. It's gonna be a tough season, Sandra.
Oh no, that's wow. Okay, yeah, I suppose that is a bit galling. Wow, that's too much. Well, listen. So, I'm kind of confused. So now Obama is trying to call for some $50 billion stimulus thing, and he's fighting for us every day, every hour, every minute.
Yeah, I caught the speech.
But the thing that kills me is that I guess he's trying to find his inner Roosevelt, but it's weak because he says interest groups he has battled talk about me like a dog. That's as much as he can muster. I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny because I'm like, well, those same groups are the ones that are giving you money hand over fist, right? I don't know. It just was like, yeah.
Well, sure. You know, I read the story. I read the news story about it. It was kind of funny because, the $50 billion thing, let's see, we're going to rebuild 150,000 miles of road, 4,000 miles of rail, and 150 miles of America's runways. So you read that and you hear that and you go, well, you know, I can get down with that. That's a good idea. We probably need to rebuild 300,000 miles of roads. We probably need to repave 300 miles of runway. But you know what? It's a start. And I think, you know, wait, how can you hate that?
I don't know, but don't.
But they can.
Yeah, but the hundred billion or 100 million that they want to do in a corporate tax cuts, I'm like, they don't pay any taxes as is. So what are you going to just give them money?
At that point, yeah, I was going to say, at that point it turns into this thing, Sandra, where you're given the money. I love this. This is from the CBS News report. They said, for their part, Republicans were quick to denounce the president's $50 billion proposed infrastructure project. And my God, you'd like to think that these bastards are out of touch, but they've got, you know, a whole bunch of this country convinced that they, holy cow, listen to this quote from Eric Cantor.
Ugh.
We need to cut spending immediately and end the environment of uncertainty that continues to impede real private sector job creation and growth. Who's going to pave the runways? The private sector? I ain't landing on no private sector runway.
Well, no, but the thing is that are we supposed to just forget that their sort of tax cuts for the rich? Where's the jobs? You know, where's this wonderful economy that's supposed to flow from that policy? I'm still waiting.
Well, you would think with something like this, Sandra, wouldn't you, that you would, I mean, somebody's got to do that resurfacing of the runway. Somebody's got to lay those rails. Somebody's got to fix those roads. Would that add to job creation? I don't know.
No, but it's just sort of, it's so clear what they're trying to do, but what's disturbing is, okay, so they take one of the houses, and then what? You know, I mean, they're not going to do anything to change the situation. And I'm not even too sure if even they can make it any worse, because let's be honest, the sort of timid response from the get with Obama hasn't helped his cause. You know what I mean?
You're absolutely right. And unless I clicked away from this, I saw something along those very lines over the weekend, and it had me fit to scream. It was someone pointing out that this is not the time to be what you just said, and apparently I did kill the link, but it's a darn shame because it's mind blowing.
Well, no, but it's just sort of, I mean, I understand it's election time, and so he needs to come out with what I'm calling gibberish, because he's saying that the Republicans seem to be running on the slogan of, no, we can't. And it's like, hello? Did you just come down the shower? What the hell?
And I was about to say something snarky early in the program, Sanders. Well, you know, Barack Obama, he sure did give him a real fine speech today.
I mean, he did want to say one thing is funny. He said, if I said fish live in the sea, they say no. And I thought that was, I'm sorry, you know, so simple. I thought that was pretty
well, good. But it's good because it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I are kind of in the same place where, no, nobody made him run for president. But by the same token, yeah, I don't even think Bill Clinton had this kind of opposition.
Oh, no. I'm never going to not claim of what the opposition is and how hysterical and vicious it all is. That's a given.
You know, the other thing I loved out of that line? If I claimed fish live in the sea, they'd say no. I know this is going to seem like a stretch, and maybe it is. But you, he, and me are all about the same age, right? And I sense that we all have a similarity of cultural understanding to a certain extent. There is a passage from Monty Python, and it appears on the soundtrack, which you had to be a real hardcore. The soundtrack to Monty Python and the Holy Grail has other stuff interspersed in it. And you remember the scene in Monty Python and the Holy Grail where Sir Bedivere is explaining how sheep's livers can be used to predict earthquakes? Well,
that movie.
There's an interlude where they break away because it's been, you know, if she weighs the same as a duck, she's made of lead and therefore she's a witch, or made of wood and therefore she's a witch. And there's a breakaway where a professor of logic steps in and says, the last scene was interesting from the point of view of a professional logician in that it contained blah, 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 blah. He said, the logical fallacies of the type so often committed by my wife. And this is where Obama's comment comes in, because I was sat there watching. I went, what? Because the professional logician then says, for given the proposition that all mackerel are fish and all fish live in the sea, my wife will conclude not that all mackerel live in the sea, but if she buys kippers, it will not rain, or that trout live in trees, or even that I do not love her anymore. And so I heard that if I say fish live in the ocean, and I immediately went to my little nerdy Python brain, and I went, oh, my God, he knows that bit.
It all just seems, I don't know, I guess this is their playbook. I have no idea. It's just really, it's just a hard sell when you look at.
I didn't start out this administration as a cynic. I have been made cynical, Sandra, and I think to a certain extent the same applies to you. And the fact of the matter is, when I heard the speech today, and I'll probably get some hate mail from some liberal somewhere who disagrees, and that's fine, but and it's a little difficult to enunciate, but when I see Barack Obama go out on Labor Day and give a big Labor Day speech, and I heard it today, I immediately sort of I said to myself, you know, somewhere out in Wingnut Land, there is a right-winger whipping a bunch of pro-lifers into an electoral frenzy, promising that this time we'll save the babies. And I have in my head this idea, Sandra, that, you know, I mean, you know, look, this is Barack Obama going to Milwaukee. It's a very, you know, pro-labor, Labor Day speech, right? And it comes on the heels of the revelations in the new book that's out from the Karzar that you mentioned, that, you know, his chief of staff is running around saying, F the UAW.
Well, not only that, but don't forget, you know, thanks to, you know, Alan Simpson, you know, their whole little secret toxic cat food commission is out front and center. And, you know, I keep that in mind because, you know, they're saying one thing, and at the same time, they're planning, you know, to turn a lame duck session into some sort of nightmare, from what I can tell, with this secret, you know, corporatist-dominated commission.
It's, you know, and remember, it's not just Alan Simpson, it's Pete Peterson, too.
Well, no, that's even worse. I mean, I was, you know, the Alan Simpson is a front person with a big mouth. The people who are operating with him, you don't hear or see, you know, are the corporations and the billionaires who were sort of backing it. And don't forget that Pelosi passed some sort of procedure, I can't remember the name of it, that will allow them to, you know, do an up or down or get the measures, you know, into Congress quite quickly.
And that, and at this point in time, that doesn't that make you a little nervous?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It makes me real nervous because, you know, when the Congress want to do something pernicious, they don't seem to have any problems, you know, getting that done quickly, like the Patriot Act and all these other sort of horror shows that we've been subjected to. But anything else, like extensions of, you know, unemployment insurance, becomes some sort of huge ordeal. But
Obama did speak fairly clearly today about the Social Security issue, didn't he? I'll fight every effort to take the retirement savings of Americans and hand it over to Wall Street?
Well, yeah, but so what, Bob? Not when he has, you know, has congressional backing to possibly do something to those entitlements. I don't trust it. That's basically what I'm trying to say. I don't trust him or any other Democrat at this point when I know what they got going on, which I don't think a lot of people know. You see what I mean?
Well, I think I think on any given issue that you tend to that you would be tempted to say that about, that's true.
Well,
a lot of the American people don't know what's going on.
Well, and the problem is, of course, most people, if they knew that they're attempting to sort of alter, let's just say that, the Social Security program, they would be like, hell no. But how are they operating? They're operating behind the scenes. They're presenting it at a time after an election. I mean, all of it is so horrific.
Well, I think it was Digby over the weekend who said it's absolutely ridiculous that people are out there screaming in the streets and frothing about a problem 30 years down the road when we've got as many millions unemployed as we have right now.
Well, no, but that is the main thing. And, you know, I keep going back because, just, you know, I have a sense of history, or I like to look back at what's what or what I remember. And I remember the people freaking out at 7% in the Reagan administration. So we know that this is unprecedented, this sort of, oh, we don't know what to do about this persistent high unemployment bullshit, you know?
That's the absolute truth.
That's the thing that really bugs me. It's like, no, don't give me this, I'm working night and day for you bullshit. It's like, no, you're not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you will be when we've got an industrial policy.
What?
You will be when we've got a manufacturing policy. and you will be when people are actually going back to work.
Well, or, you know, you're explaining clearly on your bully pulpit why shit is like it is. But since I don't think he understands, I'm not waiting for that explanation anytime soon. And another thing I thought was really funny today was from on high, General Petraeus saying that burning of this Quran is going to mess up his war effort. It's like, who's running shit in this country, actually?
I read that. On the one hand, I thought, you know, this probably does make his job, you know, that freak, because this is the digital age and shit goes around the world, you know, the lie gets around the world before the truth has a chance to get its shoes on. It's one little low rent, the pissant in some city in Florida who's going to burn him some Korans, even though the fire department has said they will arrest his ass if he does. I don't know if you caught that part, but they won't issue him a burn permit. But it's made it to Afghanistan, and you've got equally ignorant fundamentalists over there who are having a fit about it, and David Petraeus going, you know, I didn't need this.
Well, no, and I mean, I understand. I'm not saying that he's not valid, but, I mean, isn't there something just a bit disturbing about the dictates from the military right here where we are? I don't know. All of it is just really a bit too close for comfort with the sort of military. It's, you know, it's all so Roman and so weird. I don't know.
No, you just said the magic word. It is Roman.
And it's like, that dude, you know, don't forget the Roger that happy face. He always keep that in mind when you think about Mr. Petraeus.
Yeah, but, well.
The email. I'm like, this is, you know, it's too weird. But, yeah, so it's just, you know, I think that Quran burning thing, yeah, that's crazy. That is crazy. And so what the latest is that he can't get a permit or what?
No, he can't. unless he's gone to court or something later. No, the guy at Dove World Church can't get a burn permit, but he says he's going to do it anyway because Jeebus wants him to.
Well, okay, is this a case of just the crazies get going beyond what the billionaires' backers want, or is this just great part of the show as they sit back with the popcorn?
No, I think. Look, remember, Afghanistan is great business. It's a terrible war, but it's a great business. And so I think corporate America would just assume this clown at Dove World Church shut the F up.
Okay, so it is sort of stepping on some extra toes.
Yeah. He's happy because it, because I get the sense from reading about this clown, Sandra, that he is not that far from being a Fred Phelps wannabe. You know, with a bigger jumbotron in the sanctuary and a congregation made up of more than merely his extended family like Phelps has.
Oh, that setup is so yucky. Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
But you know, the other thing, though, is that he's really thrilled. This guy, I'll bet you, is thrilled to death that they're going the bananas in the streets of Kabul over this. Because he, doing his violence, will look over and say, I told you they was violent.
Well, maybe the people in Kabul will just hurry up and go ahead and knock that bank over and get all that money out.
You and I have investments in Dubai. I had no idea, Sandra.
Oh, dear God. I'm like, oh, snap with that bank. And who is the brother of Karzai anyway? I mean.
Well, he's a heroin dealer, isn't he?
Well, yeah, and he's everywhere. He's all up in this whole bank where they had the nerve to tell the Treasury Department, hey, you're going to have to, you know, bail this bank out. I was rolling. It's not funny, but it's just like some sort of the theater of the absurd now. It really is.
I've read several accounts of the Afghan bank story. I knew we were bailing out banks, but wow.
Come on. I mean, it's just sort of, I don't know. I just thought, really? You know? Anyway. Hey, the other story, I don't know if you saw this, but it was killing me. Did you know that in Argentina, folks carrying around a lot of money just getting picked off left and right?
No.
Well, there's this huge problem where I guess for every 100 peso you earn, the government taxes like 65% if it's straight across the board. So, you know, if they're taxing that much, what are people doing with their money?
Squirreling it.
Putting it everywhere else but. So, when they want to buy a house, these freaks are going into the banks to get the safe deposit and pulling out, you know, $25,000 here, $150,000 there, and they got people on motorcycles rolling up, shooting people in the face, taking their shit. They've had like 4,700 this year of those sort of things.
Dear God.
Yeah, it's just really out of control. I didn't know if you had,
No.
Had heard about it, but I just thought it was interesting. The reason why it's in the news is this big story of this pregnant woman who's just trying to take $13,000 for a down payment, and she was shot, and she was pregnant, like 8 month pregnant, and her baby died. And so everyone's all outraged, and now they want protection, you know, from the government.
But those are you said it's 65% across the board?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, no, you have to pay 65 cents out of that 100, 65 pesos out of that 100 pesos in some form of taxes across the board, state, city, whatever, federal, if you were to declare it. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's obviously the taxation is over the top there. So, as usual, people are not, they're doing everything in cash, you know. They're not exposing themselves to the state. But what's happening is that all the other poor people there, you know, and criminals and whatever, syndicants, they know that that's going on too. So they look out and they scout out and they just rob people. And the people can't report it because then they would have to be explaining, well, why do you have that much cash? You're not being, you know, paying taxes, so...
And see, you know where my mind immediately goes. It sounds like a right-wing wonderland to me because, first and foremost, how many of these hoarders out there, you know, with their survival seeds and their food insurance and their, the 700 days worth of water in the basement, have something squirreled away in the mattress. And of course, when you get down to a cash-based economy like that, you can't hang that temptation in the front of a criminal for very long without him, you know, reaching for it.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, they obviously have this sort of crazy underground economy going on, and apparently you're not obliged to file a tax return unless you make more than $36,000 a year. Which apparently is only 20% of the population.
Wow.
So if that's the case, yeah, the state gonna go after that.
Sure they are. Because their uber wealthy class probably has their money elsewhere.
Well, yeah, but I also saw this as, and they also have 25% inflation at the moment too.
Jesus.
And so, but the thing is, I was just looking at this and saying, well, you know, that situation could be here, you know, if they keep distributing the wealth the way they are in this country.
Well, precisely, because sooner or later, if the Bush tax cuts and the cowardly Democratic Congress, if the Bush tax cuts are extended, if they actually take action on it, and this goes back to those. The wham bam thank you ma'am rules that you were talking about with Leader Pelosi. If those things are extended, then that's what was the number? $1.5 million donation to every the wealthiest every member of the wealthiest 2% of this country.
Oh no, yeah, it's a direct transfer.
Which means that the government in turn has to get the money on which government runs, and I don't care how many teabaggers howl and scream about it. You cannot have government without taxation. You can't have government without money. And so the government will eventually look to, you know, look what happened in Florida. The Bush tax cuts kick in, and all of a sudden, the filing fees go up.
And not only that, but speaking of Florida, look what they're doing with this. Have you seen that? The foreclosure thing where they have, like, called out judges from retirement, and they're all slamming in favor of the lenders, even though the lenders can't really produce deeds. I mean, they're really screwing the homeowners in the name of expediency, right?
I think that's probably where it winds up going.
That's what they're doing. And also, if you look like, I'm just going back to what you were saying about the state needing to have taxes. Well, what's going to happen if they never tax the rich or they don't have a progressive tax system is that they just squeeze who can't fight back. And so.
Right. And, you know, a little bit ago in referring to Afghanistan, you said it's all very Roman. So is that, Sandra? That's how the empire was driven to its knees.
Right. That's the thing. It's like the sort of never-ending search for resources, and then you just sort of squeeze the regular people as much as you can, you know, which is I can say that looks like our future, because if you believe that deflation is what's going on, which is what I think is happening, you know, they have the whole inflation is I think depression is what is happening, and debt is a bad thing in when you're dealing with deflation, right?
Oh,
it's horrible. So
yeah,
so God knows what's going to happen here. Bring back the debtor's prison, because trust me, when shit hits it, you have a few people who can get the hell away, but none of these systems are designed to take a flood, you know, when a trickle turns into a flood.
Right, and that's the thing. You know, one of the reasons that Eric Cantor can sit there and say, well, you know, we got to reject this $50 billion plan because we've got to stop spending. And you know, the right wing's trying to get their Emery and Eileen knuckle walker mouth breathers out there to start squealing about inflation. You know what? There ain't going to be no inflation for a while.
No, there's not going to be any inflation. And I just think that, it's really scary, because if you're in debt, you know, it's a horror show with that kind of, you know, depression. But anyway, I don't really know. I'm just kind of thinking, wow, you know, that passport is up to date.
You know, I got to get I got to get me one of those.
No, it's really bad, because, you know, I just if I may say something personally, I'm sort of like operating in this kind of netherworld, because I just finished writing a review of this journal called The Journal of Academic Librarianship. I mean, can you imagine? I'm sitting, you know, I'm thinking, what planet? You see what I mean? How is it relating? Well, it's not, but it's better than starving.
Yeah, but there's a sort of, relevance disconnect?
Oh, I don't know. It's just sort of, you know, it just goes to my, like, do I really know what the hell I'm doing? But, you know, because I can't see, no matter if I'm doing something like that, I can't really escape, you know, what we talk about all the time.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway.
No, I get it. Well, let me run one thing past you before we wrap up for this evening. You know who Dan Hampton is?
No.
Okay, Dan, this is our little moment of sports geekery, Sandra.
Oh, okay.
You know, former Hall of Fame Chicago Bears defensive lineman, and he yaks on the Pro Football Weekly TV show. So they were doing and you know, it's the time of year, and Jesus, you know, but they were doing their breakdown of you know, who needs to go where and what's going to happen in this NFL game and what's going to happen in that NFL game. And they got to the Vikings trip to play New Orleans.
Mm.
You might want to be sitting for this one.
Yep, I am.
Dan Hampton says, the Vikings need to go down there and hit that town like Katrina.
Oh, come on. Really?
Yeah. I got the audio right here. I just wasn't going to subject
it. Are you going to play it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. And was it like crickets on the set, or what happened?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Oh, okay.
All right, next Thursday night, the Super Bowl champs host the Vikings in a rematch of last year's NFC title game. Tommy, who's going to win this Open?
I like the Saints. Again, the Vikings, I think, are going to get off to a bit of a rocky start with no Sidney Rice. Percy Harvin will play, but you just don't know what's happening with him. And Brett Favre has not looked overly sharp in the preseason. I like the New Orleans Saints at home.
And if you watched that playoff game last year, the Vikings need to go down there and hit that town like Katrina. I think the Vikings go down there and get it done.
Adrian Peterson, we haven't mentioned the name. Maybe still the best player in the NFL.
There you go.
The football.
That's all for this week for the best.
I would have liked it better if there had been crickets.
All these people just sort of go with it. That is so. Are you kidding me?
Isn't that disgusting?
It's disgusting. I mean, that should be regulated to the sort of inane connections that these sports people make to 9/11. I've heard a few of those too.
Well, you know, yeah, I will never get over the time when the University of Alabama got beaten by Louisiana Lafayette or whatever they are. You know, just humiliated at home, mind you. And in his press conference, Nick, $5 million man Saban, said, "This is like 9/11 and Pearl Harbor all rolled together."
Oh, dear God. I vaguely remember that story. Also with Homeboy, who had 5 second sex, that basketball play, basketball
coach.
He also brought up.
You can't say 5 second sex.
Well, apparently it was hella quick in his testimony. I'm like, girlfriend.
How could you tell?
Too bad for her. Anyway, that was like, where is it? Who? What? Anyway, yeah, he mentioned the 9/11 in some presser, and I'm just like, are you kidding me?
That just, oh, God.
Katrina, yeah, and no one said anything about it, man.
No, hopefully they're catching some hell now. But, you know, apparently it's a real low-rent program. Again, it is Pro Football Weekly, and they've got a website, too, profootballweekly.com.
I mean, all of those stuff, it just reminds me you know that Jim Rome, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's when he had the nerve to speak at the Pat Tillman funeral. He must have dropped the name of his show, like, 40 times.
Oh God! Well, but he's a shameless self promoter. Yeah.
Well, anyway, just
have a take and don't suck. Yeah.
Oh God! No, it's just that I just all these people. That's bad. The Katrina thing. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. And the fact that no one was fazed at all. Mm.
And you know, I don't know. Do you call for a guy to be fired for something like that?
Well, no, I don't. I'm not. I don't know, but it's just typical.
I don't know. Just make the dumbass go down to the lower ninth ward and see where it still is.
Yeah, no, it is. It's just beyond sort of. Yeah, that's a bad one. I mean, I'd be inclined for at least a demotion or just someone he needs to go away.
Yeah, just take a couple of weeks off without pay. That'll be fine.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well. anyway, thanks for that, Bob.
Yeah, I know. You needed it, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not really surprised. But, yeah, I am surprised. What am I saying? That's over the top.
Well, I will go this far. Black dude. You know, black dude said that. Needs to hit, like, Katrina. And I'm sorry. I want... And maybe this makes me sound like a shitbird, but there's an even greater disconnect there.
Well, that guy is black?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, come on. Good Lord. You know, he need to sit the hell down. That's a shame.
Unless I'm making a, making one of those Rush Limbaugh, Sherrod Brown mistakes. Well, I don't know. Maybe not.
Well, no, but I understand your point. But, yeah, that's, fairly shocking then, because you'd think that brother would have a little bit of sense.
Jacksonville High School, Jacksonville, Arkansas, yada yada yada, played at Arkansas, I don't know. He's got a real deep tan.
Well, listen.
We'll go white guy. We'll go white guy. I've got better light here. Okay, so I take it back.
Oh, listen. Since you're on, I forgot what I was gonna say. Damn it. What was the deal with that hideous quarterback for the Steelers trying to get his gangs reduced?
I'm not sure which is sleazier, the Roethlisberger business. Butch Davis at North Carolina, trying to work out this sort of rolling suspension of what turns out to be the better part of his entire football team.
I always like that. That's always awesome. Wow.
You know, because they went in and played LSU Saturday night in Atlanta. And just got, well, they were on their way to getting stomped, and then, you know, a couple of drop passes, and they could have won the ball game. But the North Carolina was kind of behind the eight ball all along because of all of his players caught up in this this South Beach scandal. And so North Carolina sat some down voluntarily, but some were declared ineligible by the NCAA. And it was the better part of his defense. And so, you know, Butch Davis went to him and said, what do you say we only suspend them one at a time? Okay? Or we'll suspend them one game and not for another. In fact, he was trying to pull his football team together. It was an act of desperation. I guess as a coach I'd do the same. But you can't, but, you know, it's Butch Davis. It's the Miami mindset. Screw the rules. All of that. And it can't be playing well at UNC because, you know, when's the last time you heard University of North Carolina and recruiting violations in the same breath? You know, try never.
And then
Roethlisberger, you know.
I mean, no, but it's just like, really? You really are going to do that? God, I don't know. I just, every time I think about that story, I just think how sleazy. He's such a pig, you know? Why? Because he was able to go a month without forcing himself on some woman?
Yeah, see, I'm all rehabilitated.
And I'll end with just saying how amusing it was that Hawaii dropped 600 yards of offense on USC.
Lane Kiffin has got to be having kittens with crocheted tails over there.
That's going to be fun to watch this season.
Oh, I'm hoping they got three or four losses in their hip pockets. But, you know, it was funny how that Hawaii game sort of materialized once it was clear that they wasn't going to no bowl games.
Well, interesting, and also I can't wait to see what the hell Oregon does to them.
There could be some fun in the Pac-10 this year.
I'm out west, and, you know, I always seem to hate USC.
Well, I get the sense you are not alone.
I hate them along, you know, with the Giants. I know there's some, not Giants, the 49ers and the Giants, different sport, but all in California.
Right, right. And the Padres are, falling apart at the seams, you know, 10-game losing streak.
Yeah, but they're still on top, though. That's the thing that's even more remarkable.
But they are the first division leader or league leader since the 1932 Cubs to go on a 10-game losing streak.
Well, how did salaries, you know, discrepancies? Good night.
Oh, well, you know, that's all the ownership. You know, somebody stop me before I shop again. A little salary cap goes a long way, but I'm so proud of what the Reds are doing this year. But on the other hand, I look at it and go, Jesus, you know, here's a small market team succeeding, and they'll never be able to sustain it because they won't be able to sustain the salaries.
No. They'll have to break that up right away, right? No, I mean, I don't really know, but yeah, is it a fluke with Cincinnati? I guess they're for real, huh?
They certainly got all the looks of it.
Well, I'm kind of upset about the, is it the Rockets? No, is Nolan Ryan, is that Bush's old team?
Oh, Which?
Is that the Rangers, Texas Rangers?
Yeah. Well, among others, Astros.
They're doing pretty well, aren't they?
Rangers, haven't seen the standings lately. I mean, I got to admit, I'm more of a National League guy.
Oh, okay. Well, if that's the case, then just a quick question. I know this is probably going on too long with the sports, but what did the let's see, the National, what league is the Washington team in?
Oh, they're National.
Well,
that's what used to be Montreal.
Okay, well, what did they do to that pitcher that's all the rage? What happened to him?
Oh, blew him up?
I mean, wow, that was, I'm kind of...
Yeah, that was quick? Is that where you're going?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, my God, because he has to get this sort of surgery that will take him out for 18 months or something?
Yeah, what is it, like the Tommy John surgery? Yeah.
Okay, so that was like, we just wrecked your whole career, goodbye?
I call it the Kerry Wood phenomenon, where you take a kid out of the minors who's showing great potential, who should stay in the minors for a couple of 3 years, work on technique, work on his repertoire, you know, work on his available pitches, and then you bring him up. But no, you see a hot prospect, and the economics of baseball now insist that you bring him up now, and you know, pitch him every third day.
Okay, because see, I didn't understand, because I thought he was a young stud, and I was thinking, what happened?
Well, he was.
Okay.
And they just blew him all to thunderation.
Oh, wow.
By the way, I don't know if this is true or not. I'm going way off topic, but back to the creepy bastard that's going to burn the Quran.
Yeah.
CNN says they have not vetted this so-called iReport, but it's also, they're also putting it up on the website. Infamous pastor Terry Jones, known for his activism against the Gainesville mayor and for his Burn a Quran Day, has been arrested for possession of child pornography.
Problem as a Pentagon, huh?
Yeah, well, I guess. Late last night, Pastor Terry Jones, not of Monty Python fame, was arrested for sharing pictures of children in various states of nudity over the popular file-sharing network LimeWire.
Okay, well, I mean, of course, whatever, but I'm always skeptical when it's kiddie porn, I gotta tell you.
That scares the daylights out of me.
You know, because I think that is the Trump card. So government, COINTELPRO like that.
Well, see, I saw David in Tennessee directed my attention to an NPR story the other day about kiddie porn, and the fact that you don't have to work real hard to find it, and then the FBI is on your doorstep the day before you did it.
Well, exactly.
It's like pre-crime.
No. It's just bizarre, and you're absolutely, that's exactly what I'm thinking. I'm not even talking about the sort of hideousness of the crime. It's how it just sort of pops up. Because that whole thing with Scott Ritter, I don't know, were you talking? Somebody was talking about that. You know, I'm not feeling that. I'm not even believing it. I got to be honest with you. It's too convenient. It's too odd, that one.
Well, and we have, and part of this, Sandra, is a function of the way this country operates, I guess emotionally or psychically or existentially, I don't know what the right word is. But because of our puritanical fantasies, we tend to have some very, very dark places in our own souls. And that leads, one, we've got a punishment fetish. So we love to see people punished for this kind of thing. On the Internet, I mean, the guy that NPR interviewed said, you know, we keep this thing literally stored in a lead-lined vault, talking about the hard drive with the kiddie porn on it. Because it's handled, and he said, we handle this like it's radioactive.
Well, you know, I mean, this is such a, you know, it's such a tricky, it's always a tricky subject, this, but I'm with you with the sort of almost abnormal focus and obsession with it, because on the same hand, you will throw that same child in jail for life here.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? So the the sort of hysteria about the sex with children, it just doesn't gel in lieu of everything else we do to children in this country, you know? I'm
going to
get myself in trouble here,
because
I...
No, I understand what you're saying. I mean, look, I've been taken down for a night because, bless his heart, my son is 14 years old and has all the libido and urges of a 14-year-old boy, and came in and decided to take a walk on the porn side on the production computer one night. You know, I told people about it. It's no big deal. But it scares the life out of me because those ads are out there, you know, underage babes. And just one stupid click, and the party is over. That's what that NPR story made abundantly clear. You don't even have to be trying that hard.
Well, no, but it's always amazing, though, the sort of celebrities who only have to say they were doing research, and all of a sudden they're off scot-free. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know that was Pete Townsend, and Pete Townsend was in England and was treated a little bit differently.
And that was surprising. I mean, I don't know if he was just an exception, but I've heard that one used before with other accused. But you know, it's a bit. Anyway, it's interesting that that's what they've arrested him for.
Well, I haven't seen any other verification. It'll be interesting to see if it comes out. But
well, that's that Petraeus. Don't mess.
You know what? That's the first thing I thought.
Don't mess. Oh my God. Well, anyway, listen. I gotta go.
All right. See you, Sandra. This is wonderful.
Bye.
Bye now. You know, not. I'm with Sandra. Not to put on the little tinfoil hat or check out the window for the black helicopters. But do you think there's nobody in the Defense Department that if General Petraeus picks up the phone and says, I need some kiddie porn on this guy's computer? But then again, it's Terry Jones. He's a fundamentalist. Okay? It may not be anything nearly as nefarious as what Sandra and I are sort of paranoidly speculating upon. He's a fundamentalist Christian. Of course he's got kiddie porn on his computer. Is that too harsh? How many of these stories do we have to read? And then LimeWire? Come on. Really? LimeWire? Oh, I go way, way back to when Peter Godbold was giving me the Ten Commandments of a Clean Computer, and he said, thou shalt not do peer-to-peer on thy production computer, or thy network will die. Because, as Peter said, you know, it's just filthy from top to bottom. So, but, you know, forgive my glee if it's the truth. Yeah, I don't think the Obama administration had to do anything. Again, the guy is who he is. You know, scratch a fundamentalist Christian and you'll find, you know, a diddler, a rapist. You know the drill. Especially their leadership. You know, this is the abuse, the sexual abuse of children is not something that the Roman Catholic Church has title ownership to. Now, they own a big chunk of it, but they don't, you know, they don't own it all. So, you know, worth your consideration. This being Labor Day, and by the way, the phone lines are open if you want to jump in, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. But this being Labor Day, a couple of things came to mind. If you want the poster child for what is wrong in America, you need look no further than Mott's. Ever had their applesauce? Their canned fruit, whatever? The strike against Mott's apple juice, they do juice too. Gosh, it just looks so wholesome. It's got the label with the shiny red apple on it. Well, more than 300 union members are on the picket line at Mott's. People that have been there for over a decade, maybe decades. Well, get this. It's not the usual thing where the company says, well, you know, we've been losing money. It's hard times. You know, we need the labor to give some concessions. And labor says, you know, we don't want to give any concessions. You take it out, you know, take it out of the CEO's hide. Take it out of your stockholders. No, no. Last year, not kidding, last year, Mott's and its parent company, Dr. Pepper Snapple, by the way, had profits. Now, we're not talking about income. We're talking about, you know, after everything is separated out, profits. Mott's had profits. Dr. Pepper Snapple had profits of $555 million. And with profits of $555 million, Mott's went to their union and demanded a buck and a half an hour pay cut and a pension freeze. By the way, that $555 million is a record for that company. They've never made so much money in all their life, their corporate life. A union worker at Mott's makes $19 a